This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Disco.
It ain't no country club either. This is LA. All I want to do is have a little fun before I die. There's a man next to me.
Place to Be Nation Pop. Welcome to another edition of the Sellers Points Podcast. I, of course, am your illustrious host, Russell Sellers. And with me, as always, your favorite ginger bear and mine, Mr. Kelly Poole. What's up, Kelly?
Oh, not much. Not much.
Kelly's had a hard day at work. It's been a long-ass day, hasn't it?
Well, yeah. And I'm working overtime this week, so I won't have any days off until next Saturday.
Good.
So I've got an entire week full of shite.
Well, as the great Ric Flair once said, "Good Lord, you kidding me?
You kidding me?"
that's terrible. But you know what's not terrible? We're going to be talking on this edition of the show about the last quarter of comics and comic book related media. That's right, folks. It's another quarterly episode, our second of the year. You might even call it a hat. No, we're not going to call it that. That's another show. That's another time. But speaking of that other show, we've got one of its members on the show with us to talk about this last quarter of comic book conundrums and craziness, and that would be Mr. Greg Phillips, one half of the Hard Traveling Fanboys. What is up, Greg, and welcome back to the Sellers Points Podcast.
All I want to do is have a little fun before I die.
Always.
I'm doing great, Russell.
Always with the 90s music, the 90s pop references, the one-hit wonders, Sheryl Crow was more than a one-hit wonder. She was, that was one of her breakthrough hits.
Indeed. And the first time I had ever heard of her, I used to think I had the wrong lyrics on that song for many years as a child.
So. What did you think they were?
I'm trying to remember. I thought it was "All I Wanted," and I don't even know why I thought this. It doesn't sound anything like it, but I thought it was "All I Want to Do Is Cha Cha Cha," which is not even remotely close to what she's saying. So apparently, I had problems as a child.
You know what? Everybody likes to do. They like do the cha cha.
And I did.
If anybody actually gets that reference, they can make sure to tweet me. No, don't. No, don't tweet me
about
that.
Tweet Russell at JRsBBQ.
Yes. Don't tweet me. But anyway, we have another guest joining us for the first time in actually quite a while since he's been on the old Sellers Points podcast. Mr. Todd Wepper from Conversation Comics. Welcome back to the show.
This ain't no disco. It ain't no country club either. This is L.A.
Oh, and we continue on with the Sheryl Crow. I think we found the entrance music for this episode.
Yes. I like a good beer buzz early in the morning, Russell. How about you, Harrison?
I'm drinking right now, so yeah, I do.
Oh, so am I.
Kelly, keep that buzz going. I unfortunately don't have any alcohol tonight, so I am going to go stone cold sober on this one.
Stone cold sober, yeah.
Which is going to make it a lot more difficult for me, but we're going to get through it, folks. So we want to kick things off right now with our first subject, and it's, if you've joined us before on these quarterly episodes, you know that what we talk about is just the last quarter or so. So basically, we're going to be talking about everything from May up through July. And telling tales at a skew, this is being recorded on the Friday night of San Diego Comic-Con. So we've been hearing about some cool stuff today, but the weekend's not over. The big news is probably going to be coming in tomorrow, so some of this stuff may sound dated. Some of it might not even be fully accurate information because we don't know what's going to happen the next day. But we're going to be talking about everything from the past up to now, so just going to bear with us. If we get something wrong, don't tweet us about it. We know. We'll have figured it out before you do. So anyway, we're going to move right into our first question for the group, and that is, what comic have you enjoyed the most out of everything on your pull list since the month of May, and tell us why? And Todd, I'd like to start with you on this one. What is really pinging your pull list right now?
Well, I have to say, Russell, I'm going to state that I haven't been reading too much Marvel these past, say, 6 months or so, but there are two Marvel books from the last quarter that have piqued my interest and I've read right away and liked quite a bit, and that has been Brian Michael Bendis apostrophe his Defenders comic, which just had their issue 3 drop, and Jessica Jones. Both comics have been outstanding, must reads right away. We're getting Prime Bendis again, which has been a long time since we've had that, but he's writing on the characters that he loves. They've been fantastic. They're going to be great trades if you read comics that way, or if you're just waiting for the Marvel Unlimited to hit, that'll be a great way to catch it too. But Defenders especially, I think they're hustling with this bi-weekly series so that they can have a trade by the time the Defenders on Netflix drops, is my thinking. And it is the TV team, and the story's been great so far and funny as heck. So loving those two particular books. Reading lots of other things too, but say the last two issues of Aquaman have been not to be missed with the amazing art that has elevated the story. And I'll say those are my three, even though we weren't given three out, but those would be my three to keep an eye on or that have been tremendous this past quarter. Defenders, Jessica Jones, and Aquaman.
I'll allow it. And would you care to take a stab at that new Aquaman artist name?
Stefan Stipnin.
close enough. I'll accept that as well. One day we're going to do a sequel to the episode we did a while back with Ben Morris, where he comes on and tells us how to pronounce these names, because I want to see if he gets this one right.
Surf John Stevens?
Something like that. What a mess. But anyway, Greg, I know that we've talked about this, and I know you've mentioned it several times on the Hard Traveling Fanboys. You are gloriously behind on your pull list. But that's not to say you aren't reading books that are still currently running. So the book still exists. The book still exists. So what I would like to know from you is which of these books is really pinging for you? What's pinging on your pull list? What's a book that you're like, even if I'm clearing stuff out, I'm not dropping this?
Well, as you mentioned, Russell, I am very behind. Now, I haven't stopped pulling books. I have in my trunk of my car a box and then a giant bag next to it filled to the brim with new comics that I just haven't had time to read yet. However, to answer your question, I would have to say of the ones that I've been reading in the last few months, the one that is probably standing out the most to me, and again, I'm several issues behind on it, but is Wonder Woman. Now, that follows through into this quarter with Greg Rucka leaving, unfortunately. But what I'm still reading is still the Greg Rucka run. I'm up around issue 20 now, and it's just phenomenal. Hasn't missed a beat. And I suspect that'll change once he leaves. But for now, from where I'm at, Wonder Woman is probably the queen of my pull list. But if I have to go with one where the creative teams are still consistent – I think I'll probably lean towards I think I'll lean towards Superman, actually. Clark Superman's really been kicking ass lately and taking names, and big fan of what Peter Tomasi and Patrick Gleason and company have been doing on that book.
All very good picks. Big fan of that Wonder Woman run. Was very sad to see it end. It went out on a great note, but still, you know, it's already a noticeable hole in my own pull list because I decided to drop rather than keep going with the new creative team. But I fully agree with you on Superman. Damn fine book. And it's playing into, right now I feel like it's really playing into longtime fans of Superman. Like, it's basically like Peter Tomasi plays the hits, you know, mm-hmm. He's going back and playing up all that. So if you're a longtime Superman fan, I don't see how you wouldn't really enjoy what he's doing right now, especially, you know, since it is so heavily influenced by the great Superman stories of the past. They just did a riff on Manchester Black and the What's So Funny About Truth, Justice, and the American Way, which I particularly enjoyed. And I'm looking forward to some of the stuff they've got coming up, but we'll talk about that a little later.
If he's going to hell, he's going to hell playing the hits.
On a piano, hopefully.
A piano.
Hopefully. And not a piano, a piano. That's a different instrument, folks.
Totally different instrument.
You'll have to,
two different instruments, quite frankly.
You'll have to Google that one. But anyway, Kelly, what's pinging your pull list?
It's kind of a tough question, but I narrowed it down, and it was Green Lanterns is still a very just powerful book for me. The whole buddy thing between Jessica and Simon. And just the stories that they're, I mean, you know, with Volthoom and the rings and everything. It's really good. I'm really enjoying it. It's the one book that, you know, like, you know, I wanted to kind of say Wonder Woman at the time, but, you know, Green Lanterns for me just kind of steps out a little bit more. But, you know, just consistency that the book is good, that it's a fun read. And right now, that's the one thing that, that I'm really appreciative of, is that there is a, DC seems to have a good consistency with their books, that their storytelling is it's working. And you know, like I said, that's important. You know, good storytelling is important. And the characters themselves, like I said, Jessica, seen her grow a lot in this book, and Simon too. I mean, it's not just one character. They're both becoming better and better Green Lanterns in their own right. And I don't know. It's a good series, really good series. I would highly recommend it to anybody who would like to get into a series and, you know, kind of be somewhat introduced into two fairly new characters. I mean, they're not brand new, but they've only been out for, you know, a few years. So,
I'm right there with you. Like, I have really enjoyed, Green Lanterns. That is a really good book and one that I absolutely recommend to people, especially if you're a Green Lantern fan and you're not reading that. I don't know what you're doing with yourself, because of the two Green Lantern books, I feel like it is actually adding a lot to the mythos, especially to the stuff with Volthoom. Like, we've learned so much about him in these recent issues, and about mm-hmm. the beginnings of the Green Lantern Corps itself. So,
yeah,
if you're really into that story and having that expanded, which is totally something I'm into, you got to be reading Green Lanterns. And the development that they've done with Simon and Jessica has just been phenomenal, particularly with Jessica. But I have enjoyed what they've done with Simon lately, too. They finally, like, mm-hmm. progressed him in a very strong way. I don't want to get in, like, too heavy into spoilers, because Greg hasn't quite got there yet. But he will. And it's better if you don't know going in. So, but on the other side of that, I would say that for me, a book that has really been consistently standing out, like Todd, I have a couple of them. I agree fully with Aquaman. The issue 25 elevated Aquaman to, like, next level comics. So that's can't miss stuff. And I continue to be blown away by an Image book, Killer Be Killed, from Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips. They're getting, like, really deep into the psychological makeup of these characters. Still playing around with the is he crazy or is the demon real thing, like that goes back and forth. Some just really good hard character driven drama that I gravitate to. But on the DC side of things, I've actually really been loving Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps lately. That book is really firing on all cylinders, and it's also introduced us to a couple of new, well, at least one new artist that I've really come to appreciate. I believe it's V. Ken Marion, I think is his name.
Mm-hmm. That sounds right to me.
Yes, V. Ken Marion. He is a relative newcomer on the scene. He's going to be doing some more DC work in the coming months. He's got some stuff coming up, I believe, on Trinity and maybe in a couple other places. But what I've really loved his Green Lantern work. I think that he's been kind of a revelation to me. He's got a little bit of that 90s style. Like if you're familiar with Brett Booth, you've seen something similar. But not to tell tales out of school, and I'm not throwing Brett Booth under the bus or anything, but I feel like Ken is closer to the style that Brett is going for. I feel like he's a little more controlled, and I see a lot of room for growth in his future. And it's the Green Lantern stuff he did that really got my attention. So on top of that, you've also got a really crazy story that plays on like some of the best elements of the Geoff Johns Green Lantern run. Like Robert Venditti has fully gotten his feet under him. And while he was basically riffing on what Geoff Johns had done before, now it feels like he's really moving the story in his own direction. And I dig the hell out of it. Like finally it feels like he really clicked with not just with Hal Jordan, but with Jon Stewart and with Guy Gardner. The way he writes Guy is just can't miss comics. I would read, if Robert Venditti were to leave this book and go write a Guy Gardner book, I'd be on it immediately.
Mm-hmm. My kind of guy.
Yes. The way he writes Guy Gardner is spot on. And you know what we really need? Guy Gardner and Arkillo. Buddy cop book. But I don't know how you'd... I don't know what you'd call it, but I'd buy it.
You could call it Urethral Weapon.
Oh, that's good stuff. But anyway, that's what's been kind of pinging my pull list lately. Now, we'll come to the next question. Is a little bit different. We're going to see which comic has been the most surprising, and that could be good or bad within this last quarter, which... Maybe it's a book that you were really enjoying, but it's fallen off lately. Or maybe a book that you weren't really digging, but all of a sudden, it's getting kind of good. So, let's go back with Todd on this one. Todd.
Hey, all right. So, as far as most surprising, or at least the comic that is kind of, I don't know, I'm not going to say popped my pull list, because I like that. That was yours. But the one that kind of took me off guard has actually been a series of books, and it was the DC Fifth Week event, the DC/Looney Tunes special group of comics. I didn't read the whole line, but I read three that were particularly good. The Legion of Superheroes Bugs Bunny special, the Jonah Hex Yosemite Sam special, and the Batman/Elmer Fudd special. All three of those were just dynamite comics I was not expecting anything out of, and they blew my socks off. I didn't know they had such good writers on each book, and the art was fine. The art on the Batman book was Lee Weeks, and that was excellent. But those books blew me away. I was not expecting anything. I had the lowest of expectations, and those were tremendous books. And it's nice that DC has not forgotten about the Legion, which is one of my favorite things in the world, is the Legion of Superheroes. Hey, Kelly.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good segue. Kelly, what has surprised you in this last quarter, good or bad?
She-Hulk has gone to shit.
That's
the first few issues weren't stellar, but they had a lot of promise. It looked, I could definitely see that, you know, they wanted to work on a story talking about how, you know, Jen's dealing with the death of Bruce and her, all of her own, you know, her near-death experience and all these things. She's very – but they just drug it out. And, you know, they kept putting these great covers of her hulking out. Again, it was just a tease. Every issue she didn't – you think she was. You know, she'd get pushed to some point. And you know what? I hate that. That's just, it's stupid, it's insulting, and the character deserves better. You know, I was really excited for the first few issues because I kind of got a feel of how the story was going to go. And then they just took it this whole other way and was, you know, I think it was issue 6 or 7 by the time she actually hulked out. And by that time, I was hate reading it, and I dropped it along with a bunch of other books. I took a big exodus from Marvel at that time, and I just – it's sad because I've always enjoyed She-Hulk. She's always been a really, you know, Marvel has a hard time. They don't have a significant, you know, go-to powerful female character. Like, unlike DC, where, I mean, they have a lot of really, DC's taking care of their female characters, and they have a lot of strong characters. They've had books. And of course, their premier character is Wonder Woman. Marvel doesn't have that. And so whatever female characters they have and they give them a book and it you know, just it, I hate it because they need that. And Jennifer Walters has been, you know, one of the mainstays for quite a while. And she's had some really good series in the past. Some of them have been more comical. And it was nice to see that they were going to take a change and be, you know, a serious book dealing with all the things she's been through. So, yeah, I'm really pissed at Marvel right now. So that's it. That may come out more as the podcast continues. So that's my 2 cents.
Wait till you get to the TV side.
Oh God. The alcohol will really be kicking in then.
So, yeah.
Kelly's version of the exacerbated sigh is my favorite, by the way. Now, as far as like my most surprising book, I guess it's not too surprising, honestly, but two of them really jumped out at me, and that would be The Flash has actually kind of picked up a little bit. It's a book that I have been very low on, a book that I have, like, every – I keep picking it up because I see all these things happening in it, and I'm like, this is driving some of the some of the main continuity of DC, but the artwork – has more on more than one occasion turned me off to the book, and I was to the point of being ready to drop it. But in this last couple months, we've gotten onto this this Reverse Flash story that picks up like as we're coming out of the Button crossover, and it's surprisingly working for me, mostly on the strength of Josh Williamson's ability to write Eobard Thawne. Like, if he were to write an Eobard Thawne ongoing, I would probably buy it. He's got a great voice for this character, something that I totally did not expect. It's, like I said, it's just been one of those that caught me off guard, and I find myself pulled into this new origin that he's given Thawne and the way that he's crafting this overall story. I don't know where exactly it's going. I know there's something about a negative Flash that's coming up, and it's not related to DC Metal, it's something else. And on the surface, I wasn't really up for that. I was like, oh, I can probably do without this. But reading the lead into it has got me intrigued. And Carmine D, however the hell you pronounce his name, he's still not my favorite artist, but his art has gotten a bit less busy lately. And I'm noticing that some more, I guess, more capable artists come onto the book occasionally. I'm not a big Neil Gouge fan. I don't care for his stuff. But Howard Porter has got a few issues coming up, and I tend to like his stuff, and I tend to like the way that he does The Flash. So that should be fun.
I like Porter, too. He's fairly consistent. His style's kind of changed over the years, but I think he did a fair – maybe better than average job on those Button crossovers. Of course, there was a big drop off from Fabok, but as far as for a book like The Flash, Porter does a nice job.
He does. And not having to follow Jason Fabok is probably going to elevate his work on the ongoing series a little bit more for me. Like I said, he is a very solid artist, and yeah, his style has changed since he has to draw with his other hand now. He was in a really bad car accident some years ago and had to start drawing left-handed. And
I did not know that.
I didn't either.
Yeah, that's why his art style changed, is because he is now a left-handed artist, where because he cannot draw with his right hand. And that he managed to come back into this career, you know, that should have ended his career, and at the time he thought it did. But he's back in it, and DC welcomed him back with open arms, which was really cool.
And he is my second favorite artist with the name Porter, behind only legendary country music artist Porter Wagoner.
Oh, that's – you see, this is why we like having Greg on the show. He will make these weird, obscure references that
– I like rhinestones, Russell. I can't help it.
Well, he's the rhinestone cowboy, as you see.
Bomb, bomb. There are things I could only imagine trying to have to do with my other hand, and I would not be as successful as Howard Porter is.
That's true. There's a lot of truth to that, Todd, because I am a left-handed invalid, because I really can't do much of anything left-handed. I even like my natural boxing stance. I do it southpaw because I can't stand throwing jabs left-handed. I'm so weak.
I was talking about that as well. Yes, you're correct.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And other activities as well that you may be referring to that I couldn't do left-handed either.
Speaking of beating
Popeye forearms, my friend.
Speaking of beating meat, no, that's not related to this at all. The other book that I was going to mention that I've been very surprised by, and pleasantly so, was the new Spider-Man book, the Peter Parker, the Spectacular Spider-Man from Chip Zdarsky. This guy writes the kind of Peter Parker that I enjoy most. He's quippy. He's sarcastic. He loves, you can tell he loves being Spider-Man because it's his escape from, you know, the crappy world and some of, you know, that typical Parker luck, even though they do totally make jokes about him being, you know, the CEO of his own company right now, which as we're to understand it is going away. So that's probably going to elevate the Spectacular Spider-Man book a little bit even more for me, because he'll be back down in the dumps in no time. which I hate to say it, but that's where Peter Parker belongs.
But that's where Dan Slott belongs, in my opinion.
Well, yes. Dan Slott should definitely be down in the dumps and as far away from Twitter as possible.
What's wrong with Mr. D. Slots?
Well,
why don't we just do a whole podcast on Mr. D. Slots?
Let me get Nick on the phone.
Okay.
Mm-hmm,
if we're going to go there, if we're going to have
– For God's sakes.
If we're going to do that, we got to get Nick on. In fact, we're going to try and make that happen. We're going to do us a Spider-Man show, and I'm going to get Nick in here, and I'm just going to let him rail for like 15, 20 minutes on Dan Slott. Depending on the amount of whiskey he's had, we'll determine how long it really goes.
That's one slot that Nick has no interest in filling.
Bravo.
My boy. I know. But yes, that is my only other book that I wanted to mention. Now, Greg, we haven't come to you yet. What's been surprising you lately?
Well, again, all of the books that I'm reading are very old, so you know, this is outdated information, and I retain the ability to retract my statements at some point once I catch up on this book.
Fair enough.
But one book that I have to say, and it may get much better in the coming issues, but one book that has surprised me, not for being bad, but for being inconsistent and not being able to maintain its momentum with me, was Green Arrow. And I am back on the beginning of the Emerald Outlaw story arc. I'm two issues into that. And what I found is a pattern where it's almost like hit, miss, hit, miss, hit, miss for me, where it's like the title since the first arc, which was excellent, I thought the book hasn't really been able to, for me, maintain that consistency over a series of three or four issues in a row that were, I thought were really good issues. And I think that has really surprised me because it's a book that I want to love, and there are aspects of it that I love, like the Ollie and Dinah relationship in Green Arrow was tremendous. I really like Juan Ferreira's art, and at times I like Otto Schmidt's art, but there are other times when it it comes and goes for me. And I want to like this version of Diggle, but I'm, you know, and I think he's good, but it's almost like they don't give me enough from him to really get a grasp on what his voice is. And at times I feel the characters are written a little two-dimensionally for my tastes, in terms of some of the expositional dialogue, and especially the side characters tend to come in and make almost cliched speeches and then leave. But at the same time, there are many things that I really enjoy about the book. So it's not bad. It's just one that I think I'm a little surprised that I don't like it more than I do, especially seeing so many people that do like it a lot.
Well, I can understand where you come from. Some of those issues, I think I know the ones you're talking about. It was getting a bit inconsistent there for a bit. I think when you get to the Rise of Star City story arc, mm-hmm. it'll come back in a big bad way for you. You'll be like, oh my God, I got to keep reading this. Or it may not. But for me, it absolutely worked. But that the Emerald Outlaw story was the one that I found to be the most inconsistent as well. So I get where you're coming from there. Now, real quick, I just want to go around everybody and say if you've added, like, what book have you added or what book have you dropped within this last quarter? And, Greg, you just said that. You said you've dropped Green Arrow. So, yeah. Todd, has there been a major addition or a major drop for you?
Oh, I also dropped Nightwing.
Oh, and that was probably a good decision. I'm not going to lie. But, Todd, have you added or dropped anything lately?
I dropped Wonder Woman like you, Russell, and I dropped Walking Dead just because I'm reading that in Omnibuy or Compendii. That's it. so I'm just might as well just wait. I've got the first three Compendia, and I'm behind on the third one. I added Defenders, and I added – oh, gosh, I had this ready, and I forgot. I'm going to have to come back to it.
Oh, I should mention, Russell, I added Batman back to my pull list. So,
that is good.
I added Super Sons. That was the other thing I added. And I went back and found all the back issues.
Good call.
Yes, very good call, which is a book that is absolutely fantastic. For me, I also added Defenders to my pull list, but I haven't actually started reading it yet because I was getting caught up on Jessica Jones, which has been a tremendous, tremendous read. And, you know, got to throw a little love Marvel's way because I don't get many of their books, but the ones I do get are really, really good. And like you were saying, Todd, it's prime Bendis time again. And if he's writing Jessica Jones in a book, I'm now very interested in reading it. Now, Kelly, have you added or dropped anything other than She-Hulk?
Let's see. Let me get a list here. She-Hulk, Hawkeye, Dr. Apropos, Champions and Generation X all dropped because they suck.
That is. That is a lot of books.
Well, I mean, it and all of it is the fact that the writing is just dog shit.
And
it's not consistent. Like one or two, you know, like one issue will be good. Like Champions, I really hated to drop because the first few issues were really good. I kind of dug it. Marvel needs a team book. They need a Teen Titans book. This is the closest thing they'll ever have. And it just – I'm just sick of the inconsistency that Marvel's putting out. And I just – I'm not going to pay for it. I'm not going to do it. I'm just – you know, the
wouldn't be
the
prudent
whole,
at this juncture.
No, it wouldn't. It wouldn't. It's just – and it's sad because, you know, I like the fact that Marvel is, you know, put the Champions back on the map. This old group from the 70s, you know, that consisted of, you know, a little hodgepodge of mutants and gods and spies and demons and, you know, and it's just – it's crap. It's just crap. The last few issues were just – I read it and I was just like, oh, geez, this, nothing happened. Nothing happened. You know, just like in She-Hulk. And I just, you know, oh, the other book I dropped was America Chavez.
Oh, wow. That was a big one that Marvel was pushing there for a while too.
Well, it's a big pile. It is a huge pile, and I was really hoping, I wanted this book to really be good because I really liked the character. I really dug the character, and whoever's writing it doesn't know what the fuck they're doing. So,
well, that is an unfortunate thing, and you know, we really should, they should allow us to just call Marvel, call DC whenever something like this happens, and let us air our grievances to them. I mean, doing these podcasts.
Here's what I thought back when I had my shop. I said, what Marvel and DC both need to do is they need retailer consultants that they have, you know, on retainer or whatever, they can get paid however, but, you know, just take a cross section of retailers and, you know, have them look at what DC's coming up with and let them give them their opinion on it.
Yeah.
And that way Marvel and DC both can go, well, hey, a consensus of the retailers is that this may not be the best, you know, these books. And then, you know, they have something to work on. And I mean, I really think that would be prudent for both companies. They don't have to take the, you know, they don't have to do what the retailers say, but they can take that knowledge and that, you know, retailers know more, I think, than the fucking people that work at these companies. At least what sells.
They've always given short shrift to the retailers. They've always treated them like they didn't know anything.
And
in my opinion, as long as Diamond has a monopoly, I think you still will.
Diamond,
it's hand in hand.
Yeah, Diamond is the worst thing in comics, and you know, the thing is because they have this monopoly, they can just call the shots. And for me, one of the things that I truly hated was playing the speculation game every fucking month, because I could look at Marvel or I could look at DC, and my friend Danny and I, we could sit there and look at the new preview, and I could go, okay, that's got 6 months, that will make it a year, might be 8 issues. That might be, and I tell you what, I was almost 80% right on all of the things that I called on. And I'm like, I can't be, I mean, I've only been 10 years in the game and I've been a comic book fan for that, you know, longer than that. But all of the retailers that I know, they can do this. They can call this shit.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Speaking of calling, Kelly, we got to tell the people that we've added a phone here in the old Sellers Points office. So I think that should be our first call. I think we should be calling Marvel and telling them all this stuff, but that, wait a minute, what's this? This is weird. We're getting a call. Nobody has this number.
Well,
I don't know how this is happening. Okay, I'll answer it. This is probably gonna be a robocaller, but I'm gonna answer it anyway. Hello? Who's this?
What?
Now
that's all I want to know.
What the fuck?
I just got my phone call.
I would say that you've gotten it. Who? Wait a minute. I know that voice. Is this Redneck Joker?
Oh, God.
Indeed it is.
Folks, this is not part of the program. This is a surprise call-in. Redneck Joker, we're trying to record a show right now. What is it that you want?
Gordon's got plans. Falcone's got plans. Yeah. Even Marvel has plans. I just need a phone call.
Well, you've gotten... Clearly, you've gotten yourself arrested again. And somehow, some inept fool gave you a phone to let you call in, to let you make a phone call, and you call us. Which I'm flattered that you would think to call us first. But how did you get this number?
Well, I'm an agent of chaos.
Clear. You just punched numbers on the phone, didn't you? You just punched numbers on the phone. That's all you did.
Well, I just got a butt dial.
That makes sense.
Oh, God.
I am I am just flabbergasted. I can't believe that this is our first call on this show. This is a segment that should probably never happen again. Like, I can't believe this. Now,
hey, Redneck Joker, do you have any cellmates?
Well, I have Warshak over here. He's looking at me. He doesn't look too happy.
You might want to be careful around him. You might not make it out of there. I hope there's no fry grease around. Just stay away from him in the lunch line. You know, we're just kind of like blown away here, folks. Now, look, Redneck Joker, it was great hearing from you, but we got a show to do, so we're gonna have to move on. And you know what? The next time you get arrested, God, I hope the guards are still alive.
Redneck Joker, I'm just happy that you took the time out of your day and the money for the phone call to call into the show.
Well, I'm a long-time fan.
Well, we are fans of your work, absolutely. We would appreciate it if you keep doing what you're doing, but don't, you know, sew a cell phone into any of our bodies that's also linked to a bomb. None of us are quite that obese yet, so maybe we don't have to worry about that.
Well, it's Redneck Joker, so it would probably be linked to like a remote controlled banjo or something.
That would make sense. And in fact, maybe that should be that should be Redneck Joker's new hobby. But thanks for the call, Redneck Joker. We will talk with you a little later.
Sounds good, Toot-Toot.
Folks, in the single weirdest segment that has ever occurred on this show or any other, Redneck Joker got our phone number. And we just got this thing. I don't know how this happened, but we apologize for the impromptu interruption there. We're going to get back to the show now. Guys, let's get on to, has your pull list grown or shrank since the month of May? And I'll start us on that one. I would actually say that my pull list has remained relatively the same. It seems like I'm kind of a one-for-one trade-off in my books. But Greg, how would you say your size is right now? Giggity.
Hey-o.
Well, much like many things in my possession, my pull list has shrank since May. I did add Batman back, but to make up for it, I dropped Green Arrow and most likely will be dropping Wonder Woman. I've also dropped Detective Comics. I didn't mention that earlier, and that was a tough call. And not anything to do with the book, just money and time issues. And I dropped Nightwing. So I have been kind of hemorrhaging books primarily due to financial reasons, not the quality of the books themselves.
Well, that's generally how that goes. I understand where you're coming from. Todd, how about you? Would you say your list is bigger or smaller now?
It's roughly the same. Just things like when Wonder Woman drops off, all of a sudden the Greg Rucka books show up from Image, which I've been a Lazarus subscriber from the beginning, and there it is again. I'm getting Lazarus. I've been a Black Magic subscriber from the beginning, and there it is again. And Old Guard was kind of a surprise to me. I looked on the stands, and there was a new Greg Rucka book, so I had to get it. So I'd say it's roughly the same, maybe a little higher just because we've had things like Secret Empire and Defenders coming out every other week. So maybe just a little tiny bit higher, but not tremendously. I'd say about 10% higher this quarter.
Yeah. And Kelly, would you say with your mass exodus from Marvel, have you added any stuff to the pull list from DC to make up for it? Or did your pull list just shrink and you're saving money?
It just shrunk. I mean, I actually, besides just the disgust with Marvel, I also was trying to kind of be a little more frugal, trying to kind of tighten my budget a little bit. And I even dropped a few DC books that I didn't want to. I dropped Titans and I dropped Detective mainly because, you know when you have to do that, you're looking at your list and it's all good. And you're like, okay, what, you know, so those were two that I didn't want to drop, but I did. So my list has shrunk. For basically a twofold reason, to kind of work on my budget a little bit, and the fact that, you know, I'm pretty disgusted with what Marvel is doing right now with their books. And so it's, you know, it was easy for me. Now, I did keep two Marvel books. Let me just be clear. I'm not just completely shitting on Marvel. I kept X-Men Blue and I kept Jean Grey because those two books are still entertaining to some degree and still are fun to read. So, yeah. You know, that's, I mean, it is what it is. And that's, you know, I'm not saying they're the greatest books out there, but at least they're entertaining and I'll hang on to them as long as I'm still entertained by them.
Harrison, did you pick up Astonishing X-Men?
I was just about to ask that.
Kelly?
No, I have not. I haven't even looked at it.
That's one that's been getting a lot of buzz lately. I didn't pick it up this week, but just given how much people were talking about it, I'm seriously considering going back and getting it just to see if it's as good as advertised. I mean, it was
ditto. Yeah.
It was getting all the reviews I saw for it were very positive, and that's a very rare thing to happen lately. Especially for an X book, they seem to either divide the fandom or they're like completely dumped on. But Astonishing actually got like consistent like 9 out of 10s across the board.
So what? Just for clarification, there's X-Men Gold.
Yep.
And X-Men Blue.
Yep.
And there's Weapon X.
Yes.
And there's Generation X.
Correct.
And there's the Astonishing X-Men.
Yes.
And yeah. Solo books too.
And the solo books like Jean Grey, Cyclops, Iceman.
Iceman. I'm sorry, I dropped Iceman too. That's another big frozen turd burglar.
who is left?
That is
the Astonishing X-Men. If they're all divided between gold.
Let me just say this real quick.
Phantom X, of course.
Iceman. Iceman is an Omega level mutant. Okay. Right? I mean, everybody understands he's an Omega-level mutant.
He could freeze the world.
In issue one, he's getting kicked around by a fucker in fucking body armor or some power shit. That book made me rage. So, yeah. The person – I mean, I love Iceman. I always have. He's like my favorite X-Men. And they just shit all over him. Oh!
Yeah, they,
fuck you, Marvel.
I like Maverick a lot myself.
Said no one ever.
Adam the extreme.
Oh, there we go.
I like Captain Ultra. Beat that.
Ooh. Very good. But no, I am just confused. I mean, I've heard good things about Astonishing X-Men as well, but I'm just confused as to how they are divvying up the rosters between all these different teams.
Well, to give you a hint, I know most of the roster for all of these books, and Old Man Logan is in danger of becoming as overexposed as Wolverine before him.
Young Man
right.
Logan
as,
was.
As
yeah.
Young Man. So it's like,
Old Man Logan, look at your life.
I'm in a lot of books.
Well, they've got Logan's son in X-Men Blue from the Ultimate Universe, which is – it's kind of neat, you know, but, you know, it's like – you know, when are they going to have like Old Man Deadpool? You know, they're going to have him. You know.
Yeah, it feels – I have rather strong feelings about the fact that there are like an infinite number of Wolverines, it seems.
Yeah.
Perpetually continue to increase in number.
I'm waiting for them to do the Wolverine Corps.
Right. Because the more Deadpool you have Corps. Of one character, the less special it makes that character, in my opinion.
The issue for me – go ahead.
You're just going to have like a little kid Wolverine. You're going to have, you know, an old Wolverine. You're going to have a female Wolverine. You're going to have a monster Wolverine. Well, they're doing that Hulk thing, aren't they? Are they doing that Weapon?
Weapon H.
Weapon
H.
Just stop
it. Why the hell?
Just stop it. Just fucking stop it. Oh, I want to go to Marvel and just.
This is Axel Alonso.
Alonso.
Alonso. I want to just take him and just. I want to get one of those big fish and just smack him in the face with it. Just smack him in the face with a huge fucking fish and tell him to stop it and do that like 10 times until he's knocked out. And then I'm going to dress him up in a Wonder Woman costume.
And then we can tell him what he can do
this
whenever
took a
he
weird
slits
turn.
A little,
like,
he can slit this. A hole in that fish's belly and do something else with it.
This dressing down of Axel Alonso took a very strange borderline erotic turn.
Well, you know what?
Ain't no borderline.
It's been a stressful week. I've had several beers tonight, and
things are getting weird. So let's
just hating.
Hello, producer Todd Weber here. The opinions and viewpoints of the hosts and co-hosts of Sellers Points are not necessarily those viewpoints of Place to Be Nation Pop, nor their editorial staff. We relish our relationship with Marvel and Ben Morris in particular. So, but it is a free country, and we do have the First Amendment. So there.
And
yes, don't.
If the man wants to be called Muhammad, God damn it, call him Muhammad.
Respect his wishes, and you call him Muhammad. Now, that's not to say that every decision Axel has made has been a bad one, because Brian Bendis is also still writing Jessica Jones and Defenders, and the decision to put to keep Jason Aaron on Thor was the smart one.
Do you realize that they only have like a handful of like decent writers, though? I mean, they have a handful, and that's it.
And Lemire just left.
And that was a big loss for them. And where did he go? Right back over to DC. But we'll talk about that whenever when we get on to some SDCC news.
They have tried to fix the X-Men so many times. I think it's just never, ever going to be what it was. It just isn't.
Not until they have a completely different editorial group running the show over there, because I feel like the people who are running that show right now have no idea how to make the X-Men – oh, God, I'm going to say it. They don't know how to make the X-Men great again. And they need a real change in
fake
that.
Comics. They're fake comics.
Fake comics.
Fake comics.
I'll just say this. I do like the work that Axel Alonso has been doing since he joined the Miztourage, though, recently.
Yes.
So I'll give him credit for that.
He's been a consistently underutilized heel, and now his profile has been elevated.
Curtis Axel Alonso. I love it.
Yes. Don't let the fact that his hair is thinning make you forget that his daddy is Mr. Perfect.
That's right.
But moving on, our last couple of bits here, I want to get everybody's feelings on where we are right now in this last quarter, in this past quarter. Like, do you feel like sales are generally going up? Are they going down? Where do you feel like things are right now? And are you noticing any kind of like particular trends in the comic shops where you're spending your time? And Todd, out on the West Coast in California, I'd like to get your take on this one, because I kind of know where things are here in Southern and Central Alabama. So tell me, what's the general sense out in California?
I think things are tapering off just a bit since Rebirth. Rebirth was a big shot in the arm for everybody, but I've heard reports of people dropping books here and there and waiting for the trades yet again, or going digital yet again. So I think overall things may be down just a little bit, or people are starting to wise up and say, hey, they're kind of bleeding us dry. You know, they know that the loyal customers will buy whatever. So I think people are starting to wise up to that fact. I mean, I guess I'm a sucker, because I'll still spend my $30 a week at my comic shop, but it feels like the general consensus is that that's about the max you should spend. And so I don't see anybody necessarily walking away with bigger stacks than that. I see people making choices as to what they can live without, or, you know, it is a smart option at this point to go to Marvel Unlimited and spend the $10 a month or the $70 a year and wait 6 months and look at how many comics you're going to get for that value, instead of paying the, you know, 15 to $30 to $50, however many Marvel books you were buying every month. So there's some that I'll still hang on to, but I think that overall sales are down in the shops. It just feels like that to me. And I have heard the retailer himself complain about a lot of people dropping Wonder Woman when Greg Rucka stopped. So
yep.
There's that.
Similar situation here, at least in my comic shop. a lot of people have been kind of making the exodus from certain books. Some are still like really holding on. Like surprisingly enough, the Batman books are still selling really well. They're selling just like at the same levels they were when Rebirth started, probably a little bit higher actually. A lot of people got curious after the Button crossover event. And Flash, as a result, I think of the Button has stopped like bleeding readers in my particular shop. Because there for a minute, Flash sales were starting to really go down, but they leveled off and actually gained some more folks who were curious after that crossover. And happily enough, the Superman books are holding on. As far as what my retailer has been saying, he's been bleeding readership from Marvel heavy. Lots of people have been dropping out of the Marvel books, with only like a few exceptions. And he still orders heavy on the Spider-Man books, I think almost out of habit, but they're not selling like they once were. Like there was a time whenever like any Spider-Man book was just going to be an easy sell and he was going to easily recoup his money. And that's getting harder now. Secret Empire has been doing okay, but it's not selling nearly as well as I think he had hoped it would. Some of the newer titles that Marvel's been pushing out, they're just not hitting immediately. And I can tell you definitely the X titles have just not hit with the audiences buying his books. The Image stuff is still generally selling pretty well, and a few of the Image books have actually picked up enough for him to start carrying a lot more shelf copies, like Seven to Eternity, Kill or Be Killed, books like that. Those are selling, and selling enough to, I guess, more curious readers. He's even still gotten enough, like whenever the Black Monday Murders was coming out, he was keeping enough of those on the shelf that people could pick those up because there was a demand for it. So it's been nice to see that that Image is still enjoying a little bit of a bump from those books. You know, still not ordering as many copies of those titles as he's doing like Marvel and DC, but it's noticeable the change. I notice whenever I come into the shop on Wednesdays that more DC books are selling. He has fewer of those on the shelf because people have already come by and picked up their stuff. But by the end of the week, the Marvel books are still pretty thick on the shelf in a lot of places that you wouldn't expect. So that would be where the trends are heading. But I think there may be something coming that could turn it around for the latter half of the year. At least I hope. Now, Kelly, what's things been like in old Fanatics and Enterprise?
I think it's kind of the same as it is that where you get your books over there at Capital City. I think Marvel seems to be just stagnating. DC seems to be pretty steady. Image Books seems to, you know, again, also kind of be a steady flow of good books. God Country, which I've been reading, or it's just finished up. God Country, if you haven't read that, that is a really, it's a really good story. I've really enjoyed it. But like I said, I think, you know, as much as I've land blasted Marvel, you know, these last few minutes here, let me just say this. I love Marvel, and I'm saddened by where Marvel's at right now. And I think I'm in the same group as everyone else that is kind of just stepping back from not everything Marvel, because you know, there's so much uncertainty with their books, and it just seems like Marvel's not really putting out the quality that they used to. And for a time, I mean, Marvel was just knocking it out of the park. They were doing great books, and right now they're just not. And unfortunately, that hurts the retailer, because again, like I said earlier, you're playing this speculation game. And you want to try to keep things on the shelf. You never know when that one person comes in and wants to get that issue of the Inhumans, or wants to get that issue of Guardians, or the you know, fifth time that they've put out Squirrel Girl, you know. And it's tough on the retailers, because it's like, well, I'm not going to order that. Then you you know, then you have the Murphy's Law kick in. Oh, you have one person coming. Oh, you got the latest issue of Squirrel Girl? No, I'm sorry, I don't, because that doesn't sell. And you lose a sale, and it's just – it's a shitty place to put a retailer. So I just feel, you know, Marvel, for at least from my opinion, I think Marvel is the weak part of the equation when it comes to sales right now.
Yeah, they definitely have been having a rough go of it lately. Still trying to, I guess they've been really trying hard to figure out what's going to work, what's going to get them back to where they want to be, which is on top of the mountain, which is where they were for so long. But Greg, I know that you don't frequent the comic shop quite as often as we do, but when you do go, have you noticed any changes, any trends, like something that seems different?
Well, I'm in a little bit different situation than you guys, because my local shop where I buy my comics, I usually wait and buy them about once a month. But where my local shop is brand new, basically. Fanatics in Troy just opened in September of last year. So it's kind of really hard to judge the industry as a whole based on that, because they've seen they've seen their business grow exponentially pretty much every month. Their comics business continues to grow. I actually recently had an opportunity in my real life job to write an article about them that helped them kind of increase their exposure, and they've had an increase in traffic from that. So they're doing much better. Like, they're seeing more and more people know where they are. More and more people are coming in and checking out the comic books. It's a college town, and you know Russell, we were both there, and there's always been a marketplace for this kind of a place in Troy, because there are so many, and you know, they're getting close to the 10,000 student mark on campus in Troy. So there's a huge geek population there, and so Fanatics is doing a lot better there in Troy than they were, you know, say 6-7 months ago, as the students are starting to file in and find out more about it. But I think, you know, I really pay attention to the website comicron.com a lot. Yeah. We talk about it on the Hard Traveling Fanboys show somewhat frequently whenever we actually do the rundown. But I think from monitoring their site, and we talk about it on the most recent HTF show that we record before this recording, but the numbers for 2016 came in. The final numbers have come in, and they revealed something pretty interesting, which is that the comic book industry grew last year. However, graphic novel sales were the primary driver of that growth, and print and digital sales both either remained stagnant or went down a little bit. And there was a spike for Rebirth, but the sad trend that I'm seeing is it looks like sales are going a little bit down overall in the industry in the last couple months, especially. I think Marvel's Legacy, or not Marvel Legacy, but Marvel's Secret Empire event, maybe it sold well, but I think it's maybe underperformed what they expected it to do, because if you look at the combined sales of the lenticular covers and the regular covers, the button actually outsold Secret Empire, which I think was a surprise to many, many people, given that Marvel event books are typically automatic top of the sales charts. So I think you've seen, and it's not to pick on Marvel, but my opinion or my speculation about one of the reasons that you're seeing this is Todd kind of alluded to it earlier. I feel like maybe there is saturation in the field right now, particularly from Marvel and DC. But Marvel publishes, I think, 8 to 10 more books than DC does every month. And it's to the point where if you're a fan, a comic book fan, it's just overwhelming. Because, God, you know, look, I love Batman. Okay, I've got Batman and Detective Comics. Now, do I want to go and try to pick up Blue Beetle? Or do I want to go and try to pick up Marvel Book X? Or do I want to go and try to pick up another DC book? Or do I want to buy this other Batman book that's coming out every month? Or to buy, you know, and that's just using DC as an example. With Marvel, you can apply it to Spider-Man. You can apply it to Old Man Logan. You can apply it to a number of characters. There is just such a glut of content, and it's great. But is there enough talent right now to high-quality talent to fill all of those books? And is there enough of an audience right now to fill all of those books? Or are you draining your current existing audience to the point where they're just throwing in the towel and saying, I can't keep up. I'm just going to wait for the trade. And that, I can tell you that's part of what's happening to me is there's just so many books out there. So many that I want to read, which is a great problem to have. But damn, there's just so much that it becomes this obscenely expensive hobby as opposed to all my other hobbies. And so it's like it's one of those things where the price point and the glut seem to be at odds with one another. Because if we're talking about 50, 56, 57 titles a month that are priced at $1.99 a piece, that's a bit of a world's difference between all those titles that are priced at either $2.99 or $3.99. And it adds up is the ultimate point there. So I feel like I'm not panicking because the industry is still doing better than it was 2 years ago. But I definitely am worried that we're starting to taper again, and I think that some of the lessons that I would hope that the companies have learned to this point seem to maybe have not been learned entirely.
And yet, every Wednesday, what's the first thing I think when I wake up?
It's new comic book day.
It's comic book. I got to get to the shop. I got to get those variants before somebody else does.
Yep.
It's like Christmas every Wednesday, but Greg's point is a very good one in that you got to have a job in order to be able to keep up with comics, and you got to have a pretty decent paying job to keep up.
And you have to limit your your other hobbies.
Yeah, and you still have to wind up limiting yourself.
And what are other hobbies? I have no other hobbies.
And the fact that Marvel – you know, Marvel kind of kept that whole $3.99. They never, I mean, DC at least for a while kept the $2.99, and they held strong to that. It's the price point that, you know, and I heard this from my customers when I had my shop. It was a driving force was the price. And Russell's an example. Russell would give me updates on his list, and it's like, you know, I don't want to do this, but it's the whole price thing. I've got to watch my budget, you know, and these books are just I'm scared at some point Marvel or DC, they're going to price themselves out of existence. And that's a real possibility.
They do have to watch that because we've seen more and more books coming out with that $4.99 price point, and
oh my gosh, those anniversary issues from DC killed me, killed me.
The anniversary,
which ones, Greg?
The anniversary issues that like the 25th, the issue number 25, and they were all a dollar more.
Yeah, they would go to like $3.99 for those books typically, and that may happen again when the books that are already $3.99 whenever they hit. If they hit their 25th issues, they may go to $4.99. You don't know. And the thing is, Marvel's been doing that too, but they do it now with the first issue, like with issue one, like that Peter Parker Spectacular Spider-Man book I just mentioned. Great book, but the first issue was a $4.99 book. And it dropped after that to a $3.99, but still, that's not a – we're trending the wrong way.
Yeah, and when you compare it,
get that money. I mean, and I know they're a business, but it's like, God, man, quit screwing your customer base.
Right. Well, if there's fewer titles and they're more expensive, maybe. But if you got all that many titles, and then the thing that kills me is the companies then blame it on fans for not buying lower tier books, and it's like, well, you're putting out 60 freaking titles.
Yeah. Yeah.
At $3.99 a pop or $2.99 a pop with occasional $4.99 jumps. Like, how do you expect me to do this? And when you compare it to the relative value that you're getting out of things now, like, for instance, Marvel Unlimited. Todd brought it up earlier. The value you get from Marvel Unlimited is just incredible compared to what you get from buying monthly comics. Netflix, you're paying $12.99 a month or whatever it is, and you're getting – on demand, however much time you want to spend on that. Theoretically, you could spend a countless amount of hours on that. A comic book takes you not that long to read typically. So I don't know. It's not something where I'm advocating hacking the prices to bits because they got to make their money, and the creators absolutely need to make their money. But I think that there needs to also be a little bit of a reality check of the kind of world that we live in, the kind of financial situation that people find themselves in. It's just like any organization. You know, I see this in sports too, where teams will increase prices when the economy's at its worst. And it's like, okay, I understand the economic reasoning behind that, but it also is a bad look because you're not showing empathy for the people that are keeping you in business. So, you know, there's a lot of things to consider here.
It's a tough gig. It's a tough business. And we've alluded to it that Diamond is really at the center of a lot of it. And that, I think a lot of it really does come back to that, because it's also availability of comics, because they all seem to be very relegated to specialty comic book shops. You don't see them in grocery stores anymore. You don't see them. You see them in bookstores, but they're more expensive. They're not well kept, and they typically run behind. So they're not they're not coming out at the same on the same rate or same day that you would get them in a specialty shop. So there again is that problem that you run into with Diamond cornering the market. And if they would, I think if they would move the books back to grocery store shelves or to places where, you know, especially in rural communities that don't have comic book shops, you would probably get more interest, and you could probably afford to have a lower price point where people could find the books a bit more accessible.
I can't speak for anybody else on the panel, but I never would have started ever reading comic books if it weren't for the local grocery store.
Same.
Because I saw Superman, an issue of Superman, sitting on the shelf, and begged and begged and begged my mom to buy it for me, and she did, and it started my love of comics. And that's how I bought my comics for a few years, was off of the newsstand shelf at the grocery store, and that's gone now.
Yeah, that's
I was the same way. It was spinner racks, you know, at the convenience stores and at the grocery stores and the drugstore that the local drugstore that we had here in town. I mean, they should look at going back to do that. And I don't know, Diamond. Oh, I hate Diamond. Diamond is just so much.
And Diamond is the one that has put both, put all the comic book companies, but especially Marvel and DC, are in a bad position, because Diamond is the one that controls kind of where the market is. And they're the ones that played up the idea of the specialty comic book store. And Marvel and DC really only have so much power in that area. So for their part, they keep trying to find new ways to get people interested in their books by doing these big specialty events. And sometimes it works, and sometimes it doesn't. Like we were talking about Rebirth. It was a good shot in the arm. Very similar to how the New 52 was. But, I felt like Rebirth maybe held on a little bit better than the New 52 did. And it was certainly more well-received critically. So that certainly helped. But it doesn't help that Marvel is not producing at the same high quality, because whenever they don't produce at that high quality, the whole thing suffers. But that's a good segue back to our final question of this first half, which is not really a question. I want to get everybody's thoughts on the big two events that are coming up, and we've got several that are happening. But in the immediate future, we've got Legacy from Marvel, and we've got Dark Knight's Metal from DC. So I want to get everybody's your general thoughts on the presentation, what new books stand out as potentially good or bad coming out of this, and what do you hope comes from both of these events? And Greg, I'd like to start with you on this one. Your thoughts on these two events and what you hope comes out of it.
Well, to be perfectly honest, I'm really not that interested in either one of them. And I'll divide them into two different parts and kind of explain why. I think Marvel Legacy is a case, and again, you mentioned at the beginning of the show, we're recording this before the full SDCC weekend is completed, so I reserve the right once again to retroactively remove claim to the comments I'm about to make. But based on what I've seen to this point, Legacy kind of appears to be Much Ado About Nothing compared to what we thought it could be and what we thought it would be a lot of books seem to be staying the same. There's some pretty interesting creative shifts, which is cool, but it doesn't look on the surface as if Legacy is going to be this, you know, earth-shattering event that's going to really right the ship. And maybe it'll right the ship creatively, I hope, but it doesn't, to me, appear to be anything out of the ordinary from Marvel than just another big Marvel event. And I hope that I'm wrong about that. Dark Knight's Metal is a book that I have no doubts about the quality of. Snyder and Capullo, maybe the greatest Batman team of all time, certainly on a short list of that. They can do no wrong in my eyes. They've had a perfect track record, and the story's going to be good without question. And I haven't read the build-up issues yet, but I've heard that they've been excellent, and I've got my hands on a couple of them. But I think the problem for me is the whole concept of the Dark Knights, the metal aspect of it. It feels a little bit I think a little been there, done that for me, kind of in the neighborhood of like especially we've seen the reveal just today of the evil Justice League, and it kind of feels a little bit like Forever Evil to me, where we've got a kind of a warped version of the Justice League coming to fight the real Justice League, basically. And there's some good stuff in there for sure, and I think it's going to be a good series, but it's just not one that's lighting me on fire the way that Doomsday Clock is. Doomsday Clock I'm super excited about. But Metal, I'm just kind of like, I'm going to read it, and it's probably going to be enjoyable, even very good. But I don't know. Neither one of these events right now are really lighting me up. I did see a couple of the new titles coming out of both that are exciting based on the creative teams, and I can't place the specifics right now. I know one in particular that's been going on for a while is I think it's Ed Brisson, Iron Fist. And I saw that they're bringing Sabretooth on, and that's kind of the book where he originated from. And just from thumbing through that Iron Fist book at the comic shop, it looks like something that would be up my alley as opposed to the television show Iron Fist. So I think I'm a little bit interested in that, interested in Mark Waid's new Captain America title that he's going to be doing with Chris Samnee. I think that looks awesome. So that should be fun. And a big fan of the show, by the way, Mark Waid. And then on to the DC side, some of these spinoff books look pretty interesting coming out of Metal. And again, I can't remember the names or the individual titles, but just the creative pairings are what have me interested. When you've got heavyweight talents like Greg Capullo involved and Jim Lee involved and people like that, it's hard not to pay attention. So not exactly over the moon for these events, but I am keeping an open mind and letting it play out to see where it goes.
Always a good decision. It really could go either way. I understand exactly where you come from and all that, but I'll get to my thoughts in a minute. Todd, thoughts on these big two events that are coming up, and what would you like to see as a follow-up to them?
Well, I am optimistic about both events, just as far as Marvel maybe pushing their premium titles a little bit more with better creative teams. And I do like the legacy aspect as far as the concept, but so far I have been, like Greg was, underwhelmed by the actual promise of what's been revealed as to this point, the Friday of SDCC. However, on the other side, Dark Knight's Metal, I'm probably all in on, at least as far as the new title spinning off of it. I'm somewhat ambivalent about the core title, just because, yeah, it's yet another Justice League analog, and you're going to have, even in the Justice League book coming up, Brian Hitch book, you've got yet another evil Justice League with their descendants coming out. So, I mean, it's just something we've seen a lot before, but Snyder and Capullo are definitely above average, so I'll keep an open mind and definitely read those things. But the actual books spinning out of that event have top-tier talent and a guaranteed $2.99 price point, which is smarter than
good point, Todd. I'd forgotten about that.
So, you've got creators like Ivan Reis and Jim Lee and Jeff Lemire returning, and the Terrifics seems to be like a big FU to Marvel, who is not doing anything with Fantastic Four. So they're doing DC is doing a more of a – at least on the surface, looks like a a Fantastic Four homage, if you will.
It really does. That book got big pop for me this week, or just today when it was announced that just as soon as that Marvel contract, that Marvel exclusive contract that Jeff Lemire signed 2 years ago expired just this week, and as soon as it was done, he was right back to DC to do the Terrifics, which looks terrific, if you will.
Yeah, Todd will appreciate this all day long, and this is no joke. I have been mistakenly referring to it as the Fantastics,
which would have been awesome if they had called it that. But the fact that it's
white meat baby faces from the late 80s, you got me there, Gregory.
Thank you. I figured you would pick up what I was dropping there, because it is true. I've been accidentally calling it the Fantastics all day long. When I was talking about it at work to somebody earlier, I kept referring to it as the Fantastics, and then I realized later on that I was thinking of a late 80s NWA tag team. So,
which is all good, because
there you have it.
But it's awesome that we're seeing Jeff Lemire come right back home to DC to do this team book with one of my all-time favorite artists, Ivan Rice. And it's I think they're setting it up as a monthly book, which will play into Ivan's speed much better than trying to be on like a twice-monthly book like they tried with JLA. I have a lot of hope for this book. But Lemire's also doing that one-shot Hawkman Found, which spins out of or is a tie-in to DC Metal. And there's talk. We don't know if this is true or not, but there's talk that there may be an ongoing Hawkman book spinning out of that, which would also be written by Jeff Lemire. And if that happens, oh, I'm totally on board. The only way that could be better is if Andrea Sorrentino is following Lemire back on over to DC and being like, hey, I think I'd like to draw that Hawkman book. If that were to happen, it's an immediate pull list, and somewhere I think Nick Duke just had an orgasm.
Yep. And also, if they titled it Carter,
regardless,
yeah.
And if they titled it Carter Hawkman.
Yes, if that would be a requirement. But anyway, Kelly, your thoughts on these two big events coming up, and what would you like to see coming out of them?
I'm kind of on the fence. I really both events, like Legacy, I would really I would hope that it's good. The DC one, I think it'll be fine. I think it's in no shape. You know, it's gonna do well. Am I gonna follow them? I really don't know right now, because I'm still in the event fatigue syndrome that I kind of feel like I just want to deal with just day to day stories. You know, like we're getting in our normal books. Than some big, you know, overlapping kind of epic story. I'm not saying that I won't buy them. I mean, I do have a couple of issues I pre-ordered for like Generations that is a lead up, or either I think it's a separate entity to Legacy. The one thing that bothers me about Legacy is that their renumbering is not completely accurate for every book. And, you know, I'm like, if you're going to renumber, if you're going to go back to the old number, which I have to eat a pile of crow now, because I said, and I think Russell, you may remember me saying this a few years ago. I said the days of numbers, the days of having a number is gone. Well, Marvel will never go back to their old numbers. And I said this because I really felt it. And now I'm having to eat crow because here they are trying to go back to those numbers. Well, and look, I'm willing to admit when I'm wrong, but I'm really shocked that I'm wrong. But I want to say, I think it's because it is a happy wrong, but I see, like, you know, with DC, you know, they have Action and Detective. They put those numbers back because those are the prime numbers. You know,
it's the race to 1,000 is what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. And so of course DC is going to hit that. And Marvel's like, well, you know, we should do that too. We should go ahead and go back to our old numbers. But they're inconsistent the way that they calculated their numbers for each title. At least from what I read in one article, that they're not, you know. And I'm just like, look, if you're going to do this, why don't you be really concise and be accurate? You know, go and do your research about each volume and count the numbers down. And instead of just, I hate to say it, Marvel is half-assed when it comes to these things. And I just wish they would just do it, you know. Well,
they've screwed the pooch as far as books like Spider-Man or The Avengers, where they've watered them down and created extra titles and have necessarily the legacy of, say, Amazing Spider-Man or the original Avengers. They've done you know, different versions. And so how do you integrate it? So no matter what they did at this point, it'd probably be wrong, honestly.
I'm talking more like, you know, I know the Avengers is FUBAR because you have like New Avengers, Secret Avengers, Uncanny Avengers, Great Lake Avengers. Oh my God, are these still Avengers? West Coast Avengers. Good God, these are still Avengers. Now, fuck you, I'm still an Avenger. You know,
Kelly, would Uncanny Avengers count in the numbering of Uncanny X-Men or the Avengers?
It would count for both. It would count for both because you have both mutants and X-Men. So it would go, you know, you'd have to count them for both.
Yep,
because
Havoc was on one of those Uncanny Avengers teams. I think he was on the first one when they relaunched
him. He was the leader.
He was the leader. But, I mean, like when you're looking at, like, Iron Fist or Luke Cage or whatever, I mean, that's pretty easy to kind of go back and figure out how many volumes they had. Or even, like, you know, with Thor or, you know, Captain America. I mean, yeah, you may have had some new titles, but there's not that many. So I mean, like I said, I think that I will probably just kind of look at them as they come out and just decide on the fly if I want to pick either one of them up. Like I said, I do have. I mean, the Generations are one shots, and I think I basically just put down like Hawkeye and Captain Marvel, basically the characters that I was interested in, seeing that little one shot book or whatever it was.
You're going to do that Jean Grey Phoenix book.
Yeah. Jean Grey Phoenix. I mean, those I'll just pick up and see how they are. Like I said, I love Marvel. I just want them to wake up and start putting out quality material and just start doing what they used to do. And it's like, they're just drowning right now. And it's bad. I hate to see it.
But how about Dark Knight's Metal, and the stuff that, DC's got coming up this summer?
Well, I've looked at that and, you know, like you mentioned, the Terrifics. I'm gonna be all over that because that to me, you got Plastic Man, you got Phantom Girl, you've got Metamorpho, and you got Mr. Terrific. You got a great lineup. I'm there. If they can pull this off and make this a great book, and Marvel can't even get their first family back on the title and back where they should be, which disgusts me because Fantastic Four, that's the first family. That's Marvel's family. And they have just shit all over that and not done a damn thing with it. And they should. That book needs to be respected. Fantastic Four back in the day was a book that I loved to read. Marvel 2-in-1 was another one that was Thing and some guest hero back in the 70s. Loved it. You always had a real good, concise little one-shot story. And the Fantastic Four, like I said, just need to pull that book out and get somebody good on it and put it out there because that's what Marvel needs. They need to get back to their core, the books that just brought them all of this love and you know, people want to be in that, people want to pick that book up and read it each month. And I remember reading a lot of Marvel back in the day. John Byrne's run on Marvel was a great run. And I mean, I remember reading Fantastic Four during the 70s. You know, yeah, it was Avengers and X-Men pretty much, but hell, if there was a Fantastic Four issue on the spinner rack, I'd pick it up because it was good stuff.
You know, that's a good point. Like, Marvel needs to get back to that, and it's possible that Jeff Lemire even pitched a Fantastic Four story to him, and they were like, "Yeah, no, we're not going to do that." So he takes it over to DC, and they
Is there a conspiracy against the Fantastic Four right now? I mean, is this an obvious thing
that's been,
with the Fox relationship?
That's been the talk for years.
That's been the talk, and they just, you know, Marvel doesn't want to do anything because they don't own the rights. You know, or they don't own the movie rights. They can't do anything with it.
It's the same, like, kind of with the X-Men, like, why the X-Men are where they are because of all that, although I feel like that's in a slightly better place relations-wise. But when it comes to Fantastic Four, I think that maybe the Marvel strategy has been, like, let's devalue the property so much that nobody has any interest in it, and Fox is just
And I wonder – I was going to say, I also – because this is, I'm coming from somebody that doesn't and has never really liked Fantastic Four. So, like, I wonder if I know that the Fantastic Four has been considered a more challenging property to consumerize in the last several decades. And so I wonder, but then again, I think about it, and I know there are writers out there like Mark Waid, and who has talked openly about how much he loves the characters. And there are writers out there who would gladly write that title if it were available. Yeah. So I don't know. It's not something I'm ever interested in, but I know that there are a ton of people out there that are interested in them.
Yeah, I think that those classic Fantastic Four fans would absolutely show back up for their book if the book felt like it was theirs again. And you need that strong creative team in there. I would love to see Waid take a crack at it. And, you know, but speaking of Waid, though, he's one of those guys that writes individual heroes and team books almost on – like equal footing. He's one of the rare breed that can actually do that. And
except for the Champions, right, Kelly?
Well, I mean, for right now, I mean, the Champions, like I said, it had a strong start.
Yeah, the first five were good.
First five were good, and then it just fell off. And like I said, you know, I love Mark Waid, and he did a Legion series. He did the Legion, and that's one of the series. You know, I love the Legion, but that era where he wrote, I pick up every month, regardless, because I'm a diehard Legion fan. I can't say that I was happy with his complete run. Were they good issues? Sure, there were some good issues. There were some good, you know, good arcs that he did, and then there was just stuff. I was like, oh my god, I'm falling asleep. I need something to keep me up. Yeah, you know, I need, you know, coffee or something to get through this book. And that's how it kind of did with Champions. I could see the same routine. I'm like, no, I'm not doing this. I love the Champions right now, but I can't support this book if he's going to, you know, start with the boring shit again. You know, just he's lost it.
An inconsistent Fantastic Four book written by Waid would be better than nothing.
Yeah.
At this point, I think so.
And I'm personally speaking for myself now on these two events. I am very excited about Mark Waid and Chris Samnee taking over Captain America, the team that reinvigorated my Daredevil fandom. That almost makes it an instant pull list for me if I can find somebody that wants to buy that digital code off of me. I find that book is coming home with me because I am definitely in for a Mark Waid Captain America. Especially with Samnee on art, that's just tremendous. And of course, I'm going to continue on with Thor because Jason Aaron has just cemented himself as the greatest Thor writer of all time. He gets what I want, and I'm excited to see what he's going to do, bring back the Odinson, and how he's going to wrap up that big story. And it's a big landmark issue, Thor 700. So that's a big deal. And the legacy one shot issue itself is something I'm definitely going to buy, because it's got a killer team on it. I do believe that's Jason Aaron and Asad Ribic. That's must buy comics. I can't miss that. As far as Dark Knight's Metal, I'm higher on it than I think most of you guys, mostly because I am a big Snyder and Capullo mark. So whenever they're doing something, I'm totally in. I'm going to get it. And I'm going to wind up buying every single tie-in to it, mostly because the actual books that it ties into are books that are already on my pull list anyway, so it's not like I have to stretch myself.
The one-shots I may be a little bit more discriminating with because it's really going to depend on creative team. But I've been mostly happy with the creative teams they've announced for those one-shots. And also, like you guys, definitely in for the Terrifics. And I am actually very curious about James Tynion IV's The Immortal Men, the book that he's doing, at least for its first three issues, with Jim Lee. And beyond that, we'll have to see. Some of the other books I'm not all that high on, but I think if you give me a good, if The Immortal Men is good and if The Terrifics turns out to be a really good book, then I think that the Dark Knight, I forget what the branding is that they're calling that, the spinning out metal, but that line of books, I think they if they can produce 2 to 3 strong hits, they'll be around for a little while. If not, it'll be another one of those things that that kind of fizzles or winds up under a different publishing banner, kind of like how Young Animal is now going to be Vertigo. So
kind of like Bloodlines is nothing. Remember that?
Yeah, vaguely.
Bloodline. Yeah. You know, it's weird, Todd, is when I was still reading, you know, I was reading comics heavily when that came out back in the day, and I remember nothing about it. I don't remember it being in the books I was reading, but I'm sure it was. I don't remember a damn thing about it.
There was one great thing that came out of Bloodlines, and it was Hitman by Garth Ennis, and that was it.
And
maybe we'll get a new Hitman, metaphorically speaking.
Ha! Not Bret Hart's retired, Greg. I'm sorry.
Damn it.
You just draw an S in front of it.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, it sounds, you know, like there's, you know, Kelly was talking about a lot of shit piling up on a hypothetical glass table. Perhaps the solution to Marvel's perceived woes is the hiring of one Klondike Bill.
All
right.
We're going to get deep on this one.
Klondike Bill's a sausage lover. So, Kelly, what do you think about Phantom Girl in the Terrifics? Do you think this is just a she's a 30th century character, is she not? She was in Legion back in the day.
Yeah, but that's Tenya Wazo. I mean, I was wondering the same thing. I was like, who is this, the Phantom Girl that, you know, is from the Legion? And if so, right. Well, I got to – If there's no other reason to pick this book up, I'm picking it up for that. You know, there's so many good things about it, but hell, I mean, she's in it, and I want to know how the hell she's here. You know, we've already had, you know, the whole thing with Saturn Girl being, you know, in this time period within the Batman books.
Yep.
So it's, you know, I keep hoping, and you know what? It's going to happen at some point. They're going to announce a Legion book. And I mean, it's pretty obvious at some point that we're gonna see the Legion back. So I don't know. Maybe this is another stepping stone to that book.
I hope so. It is a slow burn at this point.
Yeah, it is.
They have taken their dear sweet time to finally get to the Legion, just like we've taken our dear sweet time to get to a break, and now we're going to do that. So that you folks can have a little respite before we get into the other side of this, which where we will be talking about comics and other medium of the last quarter, which would be television, movies, and while there hasn't been much TV, there's been a metric shit ton, if you will, of film. There it is. There have been plenty of film, but it hasn't been shit. And when we come back, we're going to talk all about that. So don't go anywhere.
Enjoy the Watchmen trailer, everybody.
Oh, dear God. What have we done?
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com, and we offer those to you on three great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the original Place to Be podcast, as well as Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, as well as the Our Vantage Point podcast and Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver quick-hit pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Psychology is Dead, Puro Potpourri, Stacy and Elliot's Bogus Journey, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Letters from Center Stage, Space City, an NWA Classics On Demand Adventure, Through the Years, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, and much more. And on our popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, Go Home in a Box, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, Geek and Sassy, and Imaginary Stories podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including the Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows plus others available on PlacementNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlacementNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlacementNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Coming soon from the creative minds of the Place to Be Nation Pop Network, the audio adaptation that no one was asking for, but everyone deserved. Place to Be Nation Pop Comic Book Theater presents Watchmen, an audio feast for your ears, thrilled to the exploits of the comedian.
These are demons. It's an intergalactic invasion into this space through people. They have sexual rituals, some of the most ancient Egyptian rituals, where they believe they are possessed by entities. Space aliens.
Silk Spectre.
Good. Hey, licking your finger, it's like licking a battery. It's all sort of...
Night Owl.
Yeah, well, you know how it goes. Sometimes I come down here and sit around a little bit. Think about the times when we were making the towns, doing the drugs, fucking the rats.
Dr. Manhattan.
Clearly you don't really care about what stimulates me.
Ozymandias.
Puta. The Soviets, Vietnam, anyone, Mila Jovovich,
and Rorschach.
But what it doesn't change is the fact, and this is something we can all agree on, that all of the whores and politicians will look up and they'll shout, "Save us, JR," and I'll look down and I'll whisper, "Ma."
You won't believe your ears. You won't believe the dark places your imagination will take you. Featuring cameos from some of your PTBN favorites.
Baby, that's quite a drop, I said.
Ugh, they're just paying me to handle monsters and out of space? No.
Maybe it was a couple of guys and they overpowered him.
He cometh up and swerve, cut down like a flower.
Fly me to the moon, let me fuck amongst my star. Oh! I guess Dr. Osterman finally arrived!
Okay, number one, big blue dick. You don't bring it up. It's big, it's there, it's wagging.
It's Watchmen. The greatest graphic novel of all time, as you've never heard it before. Transformed into the most self-referential collection of in-jokes on this or any other medium. Only from the hard-traveling fanboys and Place to Be Nation Pop.
Hear what I say. We are the business today. Buck shit is finished today. All T and J. We the new PB and J. We dropped the classic today. We did a tablet of asses today. The joints with the matches and ashes away. We dash away. Donna and Dixon, the pistol is blasting away.
Doctors of death, killing our patients to breath. We are the pain you can trust. How can it work? Hooking up curses and slurs. Smoking my brain in a mush. I became famous for blaming you fucks. Naming my way through the brush. There was no training or taming of me and my bruh. Live like a man, but I'm animal raw.
We are the murderers there. Dead with the jail and we murdered the murderers there. Then with the hell and discovered the devil delivered some hurt and despair. Used to have power to push. Now I smoke.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the second half of the Sellers Points Quarterly. Our second quarter, if you will. Now, of course, the last half we talked about the last quarter in comics. And in this second half, we're going to move over to the other side of the equation, which is comic book media in other media, which would be mostly television and movies. And since this is Comic-Con week, that means new trailers are dropping all the time. And, of course, we're probably not going to talk about some of the bigger ones that are going to drop this weekend. At least I assume that there's probably going to be a new Justice League trailer that we probably won't see until, like, well after the fact, if there is, in fact, one. But, you know, everybody's assuming that. We're also, who knows what else Marvel is going to drop. But they just dropped a big one tonight, which was the a big full-length Defenders trailer. And that's actually what we're going to talk about right now, because each of us just watched it. And we have thoughts. So I'd like to go around the panel and just get your general thoughts on what you thought of the brand new Defenders trailer, which gave us a little bit more of the story and a little bit more of the character dynamics that we're probably going to see in the show. Greg, I want to start with you on this one. What did you think of this Defenders trailer? And if you can remember the one that dropped before, how do you think it compared to that?
I think both of them were good trailers. I think I probably preferred the Stan Lee narrated one just because it was so different and unique and really stood out to me. Like, it was really just fun, and I love any time I get to hear Stan talk, and so that was really cool. But the second one, like you said, gave us a little bit more details about the story, the plot, obviously involving the Hand, and we got to see Sigourney Weaver's villain character for the first time, and she looks like she's going to be good. She's going to be menacing. Looks like the action is going to be on point in this one compared to what we've seen maybe in some of the other shows in recent times, and it looks like it's going to be a fun trailer. I will say some of the jokes didn't land for me in the trailer, but I don't think that's a huge deal. Because, I mean, comedy hasn't been the strong point of these Netflix shows for the most part. So I think the action's going to be on point. The characters look good. And I'm really interested in seeing Jessica and Matt Murdock interact with each other. That looks like it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, that kind of stole the trailer for me was the bits of Daredevil and Jessica Jones interaction.
Nice
well,
ears.
Yeah, they're horns. but that was a good line. I thought that joke landed for me. But I agree, Greg, that some of the humor didn't really feel like it worked all that well, but the action scenes looked great, which is a big change from the terrible Iron Fist show.
which Iron Fist is in this, and it looks like whoever choreographed the action this time around did a better job with him than he got in his own show. And of course, it looks like the Daredevil action scenes. Like whenever I'm watching it, I'm like, this is, looks like Daredevil fight choreography. So I think whoever was responsible for that is probably migrated over to Defenders. Todd, what did you think of this trailer?
Yeah, it was cool. We had a callback to the great hallway fight from Daredevil, which was kind of the first time I went, oh, shit, they're really doing something cool here. Back in the Daredevil season one, we saw supporting cast. We saw Foggy hugging Karen, and there's stuff going on. But we also saw Elektra, zombie Elektra on the rooftop. So I don't know. I'm going to watch it. It's going to definitely be better than Iron Fist, because how could it not be? And compared to the first trailer, I get, you know, there was a previous kind of funny teaser trailer for Defenders, and then the Stan Lee one that dropped earlier this week was just awesome, even though it had a lot of clips from the preceding shows. That was kind of the concept of it.
It was more of a sizzle reel of the other shows rather than a Defenders trailer, but there was a teaser trailer that used Nirvana's Come As You Are throughout the entire thing.
Yeah. Okay. I don't recall that one, but they did use Come As You Are in the most recent trailer too.
Yes.
On the subway, and that was cool, and I enjoyed, you know, Jessica's drinking a beer on the subway, and you do see a lot more interaction between she and Matt, which is cool. Nobody's in costume except for Daredevil, and I guess that's just the way it is, because that's just what these shows are, and that's what it is.
Jessica Jones and Luke Cage don't necessarily have costumes per se, I guess. But yeah, there's still no classic Iron Fist look. Like if you're hoping for that do-rag mask and
or even some kind of nod to it.
Yeah, or even you're right. Even a nod to it. There, we didn't see any of that in this trailer. It seems like they're still putting that off.
It also looks, and you reminded me of this, Todd. The one downside I can say is it does look like we're going to see the return of crying Karen. As she needed to be comforted by Foggy in the trailer.
Karen gets a bad rap. There are certain shows, certain weekly episodic comic book podcast shows that give Karen a hard time. But I tell you what, I'll take her on my TV any day of the week.
Hey, I'm not knocking her in that regard.
Todd. Here.
I'm the same way in that regard. I'm just saying maybe allow her to enjoy life once in a while instead of perpetually cry.
Well, if they ever get to Born Again, she's going to be enjoying a lot of things.
Oh,
well. But moving over, Kelly, you saw the trailer too.
Sometimes, but yes.
Let me just state for the record that, you know what, when Lockjaw teleported Black Bolt from that room into the main street, I was totally blown away. I love Lockjaw. And seeing Triton and Crystal, Medusa, man, that was just a terrific trailer. I love what they're doing with this series. I just can't get enough.
You're being funny.
And what? And
put
when
the whiskey down.
When Maximus shows up and they're taking over, and he's like, "Come on, brother, are you gonna?" And then Lockjaw teleports him away. Oh, I was blown away. I was just, oh, my heart patter. Oh, so great, so great. And it's an IMAX. It's in fucking IMAX.
Kelly, that's the Inhumans, which we're going to talk about in a segment or two from now.
Oh, shit. What were we talking about? Oh, Daredevil? No. Oh, the Defenders. Excellent. You both have said everything that needs to be said about it. Just spot on. Great. Love it.
And we will be talking about that other trailer that dropped. Oh, God. In fact, why don't we just go ahead and get it out of the way? Inhumans also dropped a new trailer today.
I can't wait for this rant that's coming up.
It is
dropped.
It is certainly a unique situation. Before we get to that, yes, I love that the new Defenders trailer. Looked awesome. Dug it. And can't wait to actually sit down and binge that one, which I'll probably watch every episode of it in a single sitting. But
I'm going to, Kelly, we're going to save you for last on this one because I think that this needs some build up. Greg, a new Inhumans trailer dropped. And certainly a unique situation. Your thoughts?
Haven't watched it. Haven't watched it, Russell. And the reason I haven't watched it is because there's never been a comic book property that I've had less interest in than the Inhumans.
You know what? That's a fair point.
It's I don't care about the concept. I don't care to learn about the concept. I've had the concept explained to me, and I'm still not sure I understand the concept. So all that I can say is to those who love the Inhumans, congratulations. You've gotten a TV show out of it. I hope you're happy. To all the rest of us, all I can say is let's sit back and enjoy the shit show.
As far as my own opinion on that Inhumans trailer, Supergirl, Legends of Tomorrow, I ragged on you pretty hard over the last season about your use of gigantic CGI characters and how poor it looked. And I thought that, you know, weren't being given enough budget for the amount of real estate you had to deal with. I don't think I'm going to be giving you that much shit in this coming up season. I'll just leave it there. Todd, your thoughts on the new Inhumans trailer?
All right. I could just take my microphone to the bathroom and flush the toilet, but I'm not going to do that. But I will say that this is complete and utter garbage. And they gave an award to Jeff Loeb today, the Inkpot Award, which is for excellence in comics. They gave it to him at San Diego Comic-Con today, this very day, for his work with Marvel TV. And I guess specifically for the at least the first three Netflix Marvel shows, notwithstanding Iron Fist, because everybody agrees that is skippable and just less than mediocre. Inhumans looks to be the television equipment of taking dog excrement and putting it in a paper bag and lighting that bag on fire and playing Nickelback in the background, because
don't it put it out with your boots, Ed.
It's so bad looking. The CGI looks bad. The acting looks terrible. The character designs look terrible. This is going to be an epic flame out and failure on Marvel TV's part. And I know Jeff Loeb is involved, so bad for you, Jeff. But
yep.
This, and yet this comic or Inhumans came from Fantastic Four. I guess well-revered, and even I've read good Inhumans comics, believe it or not. The Paul Jenkins series from the early 2000s, Marvel Knights series, was great. Honestly, it was really good. But that may be it as far as quality Inhumans concepts. Bad concept or comics, bad concepts, bad execution, bad costumes, bad CGI. Medusa's a hottie, but guess what? I've got Pornhub for free. I mean, people have Pornhub for free.
People, and if they want to utilize such a –
if they choose.
If you so choose your porn, you can find it without having to pay for it or sit through a boring-ass show.
Right. You just type in the keyword parody, and you'll see better superhero stuff on that particular site. So I've been told, so I have read. So yeah, Inhumans, hashtag no more Inhumans. Yeah, it's going to be garbage. But I may have been a worthy rant. But I can't wait to hear what my friend Kelly is about to say.
To quote my favorite boss character from Saturday Night Live, Mr. Tarkanian: "It looks like someone took a giant crap or a dump on my desk and put it there and said this is work. It's not work. It's crap."
Oh. Oh, it's good, folks. We've been building up to this one because earlier today I did put out the hashtag No More Inhumans on Twitter. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Kelly to give you his well-reasoned and just good thoughts about this Inhumans trailer. So, Kelly, we heard your thoughts a minute ago, but what do you really think about the Inhumans trailer? Batten down, folks. Here we go.
Just excuse me. Let me get some more water here. All right. Many years ago, few great men came up with a few really interesting concepts. One of them was the Fantastic Four. It's a great comic, excellent comic. Many things have kind of spawned out of the Fantastic Four lineage, the Inhumans being one of them. And I've always honestly have enjoyed the Inhumans. I thought they were an interesting group of characters. I thought the whole concept of, you know, these genetically kind of engineered, this engineered race that they, you know, go through the Terrigen Mist at a certain point in their life and they're granted these powers. It kind of changes them. Is a totally interesting and you know, kind of dynamic way of maybe telling some really great stories. But what we're dealing with right now is an abortion. It's a horrible thing. This TV show, The Inhumans, is a big pile of excrement. It's horrible. They're trying to cash in on the fact that, you know, we need to do some more superhero type stuff. We need to put another movie out. We need to do a neat. I mean, this was supposed to be a movie. They couldn't do that, so let's just do it as a TV series. Well, we'll do it in IMAX, then we'll charge people for it. And you know, it's shit. It's a big pile of shit. I would love to see Black Bolt, Medusa, Lockjaw, Triton, Karnak, Gorgon. Yeah, I'm a fan. I know their names. Maximus. I'd love to see them all on the big screen, or I'd love to see them on the small screen. But do it right. This looks like a hacked just attempt at, all right, well, we've pushed the Inhumans agenda for so long. We've talked about a movie. Let's just give them something and get the fuck out of here. We're done. You know, the Marvel imagination funhouse is dead. They don't know what they're doing. They're asleep at the wheel. This series is going to just take a nosedive right into obscurity. We're already on the precipice of the superhero bubble, where, you know, at some point the superhero TV shows and movies are going to implode on themselves. So at this point, you've got to start putting out quality material, or it's going to fail. And you know, we've got the Teen Titans series coming out soon. We have, you know, Black Bolt. I'm sorry, not Black Bolt. Black Lightning is coming out with his own series. And I really like to see these series make it, but there's just, you know, we've got all this other shit coming out that really and truthfully is not going to make it. Inhumans, I think, is going to be one of the mainstays. It's going to fall. For one thing, we shot it in IMAX. Well, you could polish a turd all day and it's still a turd. You know, it doesn't change the fact that it's garbage. And, I think the Inhumans agenda that Marvel has pushed for these so many years, it's done. People are tired of it. Okay, you know what? You don't have the rights to mutants. You don't have the rights to the X-Men. I know you're trying to make them Inhumans, kind of that X-Men feel, X-Men-ish type of story and characters. You can't do it. You just can't do it. You know what? You shouldn't have sold the rights back in the day to Fox. You're not going to get them back anytime soon. You can cry all you want. You know what? Just deal with it. But don't give us a watered down, hacked version of what you'd want to put out, which is the X-Men, and tell us, oh, it's the Inhumans. It's the new mutants. It's the new way of telling these, you know, stories. Because it's not. You're shitting on classic characters in order to, you know, feel good about or try to make us feel good about the fact, oh, well, we don't have the X-Men. Well, we have the Inhumans. I don't want the Inhumans. I wanted the X-Men. Well, I'm sorry, but we don't have that. We have the Inhumans. Look, you know what? Screw you. I don't want it. I'm just done. And that's my take on it. Like I said, I love the characters, but this show is just a big steaming pile of excrement.
They do need to just go ahead and accept that it's just not going to happen. It's not going to happen. Stop trying to make Inhumans happen, Marvel. It's not going to work. We're not buying it. And hashtag no more Inhumans. We're fine. Yeah. We're fine without an X-Men stand-in
in the MCU. In fact, it was working just fine before they came along. It'll work just fine whenever you finally realize that this isn't going to happen.
Take a hint from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. You tried a whole season of introducing and pushing the Inhumans agenda on us, and all you did was make a show that I wanted to like hate more than everything else. And now I'm just hate watching it just to give me something to be entertained by, is to just, you know, say, all right, well, tonight's the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. premiere. Great. I got something to, you know, bitch about, you know.
And I'm glad you brought up Black Lightning, though, because that show, I think it's looking pretty good so far.
It does. And I'd love for it to make it. But when you have crap superhero shows coming out because everybody's saying, oh, well, superhero shows are great now, let's just start throwing them out there, You're going to fucking burst the bubble, and you're going to make it hard for any other shows to come up through the ranks.
It is a real worry, but I'm very excited about what I've seen of Black Lightning so far. I think that show is going to be good, but it's another CW DC show, and DC seems to be hitting it out of the park with their television shows, Gotham notwithstanding. And
Hashtag Gotham sucks.
I didn't say it this time. I'm letting.
If I may, when it comes to Gotham, Russell. If I may, I have one simple quote that applies to Gotham and probably applies to the Inhumans as well.
Proceed, sir.
It's all bullshit. All of it.
It is. I always love visits from the wonderful Arnold Schwarzenegger on this show. Anytime he shows up, it's always like a good pearl of wisdom. And everyone should listen. That was good stuff. But speaking of like other TV shows, We'll very quickly say we know that Inhumans just looks terrible, but there are shows out there that had okay seasons this past season, and right now they're in the midst of shooting their new seasons. Like, a lot of the shows have already started filming. We've seen pictures coming out on Twitter and where else, and all sorts of other social media, that being like Arrow, Flash, Legends of Tomorrow, Supergirl. But which of these shows do you guys feel like needs the most work for this upcoming season, and why? And Greg, I'd like to start with you on that one. Which show do you think needs the most work, and what kind of work would you like to see done?
You know, it would be easy for me to pick out a show that I don't watch and say, you know, like for instance, this Inhuman show, or something like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. that I don't watch. Gotham that I don't watch, but I'm not going to do that. I'm going to stick to the shows that I do watch. And the one that I think has the most to improve on this upcoming season, the one that I probably have the most concerns about going forward, would be Supergirl. And it's close to me because I think Flash has some issues they need to get in order as well, but they're not as concerning to me as some of the issues with Supergirl. I thought that season two in some ways took a step up and in some ways took a step back from season one. I think that overall I probably enjoyed it a little bit more, but there were aspects that were concerning as it came to a close. I really feel like they need to get away from the replicating the Kryptonian villain concept. It's kind of been beaten into the ground at this point. We get it. You've told the story repeatedly. So maybe get away from the alien invasion concept and focus on a more earthly foe, and maybe actually wrap up the Cadmus arc instead of just leaving it hanging like they did this year. And I'd also – I'm not going to harp on James Olsen like I always do. At this point, I've thrown in the towel and just accepted that he's going to be part of the show. But what I would like to see is more of a focus on telling a linear story that goes somewhere. What we saw this past season were a lot of repeating the same subplots over and over and over again. My God, how many times did Maggie and Alex almost call it quits during the course of the season? It's like at a certain point, it's like, okay, good Lord, I get it. For God's sake, I get it. Same thing with Kara and Mon-El. I get it. You know, it's like just tell your stories, and then when they're told, and you can move on to some other aspect to do. So I still think it's an enjoyable show, but I think it's one that has to take a step up in season three, where it runs the risk of regressing, and none of us wants to see that.
You said it, Bubba. That's that would be my position as well. Supergirl has some ground to make up. It's season two was like two steps forward, one step back, and and of course I've harped on and on about the CGI, but and I'm not going to pick on shows that I don't watch because that's low hanging fruit and that's unfair. So, Todd, what show is in most need of improving that's on your watch list?
Well, Greg pretty much said it all. I am encouraged with the news that Erica Durance is coming on to Supergirl.
Yes.
Perhaps not coming on to Supergirl, but...
Hey, I would be fine with that. Now, listen, that's a story worth telling.
It is. And but I am concerned. I mean, I heard that Alex will not be on the show as much this year, or if at all. And there are other story tweaks coming on.
I thought it was Maggie that was not going to be on the show as much. The lady that plays Maggie Sawyer is...
You are correct. I said Alex and I meant Maggie. Alex is the sister and she will still be on the show.
Yeah, she's still a regular.
I am on the second half of the show and I am on my next beverage. So, yes, Maggie will not be on the show. We have among ourselves in the Place to Be Nation pop comics feed we've talked about. God, wouldn't it be great for Kane to come onto the show? But we don't know if that's happening, or perhaps it will never happen, but we it's nice to speculate. But Erica Durance, who is the chief teller at my spank bank, will be
big pop on that one. Get it?
And I can relate.
Sometimes. Will be, and who knows what she looks like these 8 years later since Smallville went off the air. But I think she's taking care of herself in a Canadian sort of way. So looking forward to that. And Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. had a pretty strong first half with the Ghost Rider stuff. Second half was a little bit more Inhumans heavy, if I recall. Actually, I don't recall very well, even though we watched it as a family hoping that Ghost Rider would show back up, and he did show up at the end. But we watched the show like that with very reduced expectations, and because we just know that it's not going to be great. They're going into their fifth season, and it's not strong at this point. So, and yet I'll still watch just because I am a Marvel fanboy. I have the Marvel DNA imprinted upon me.
And it did seem like, from what I read, did it seem, Todd, like this was at least a step up from the previous season?
It is, but. You know, so I keep making analogies to fecal matter. It was like the waste went through the waste treatment plant and was a little bit more safe for human consumption. The show was better, but it still wasn't good. You know, it was a D- as opposed to an F. So
you got me on that one, Todd.
So yeah, but you have parts of a show that could be there. You have Coulson, who we once upon a time we all liked. We have Ming-Na Wen, who is a quality actress and does the action stuff well. We had Bobby Chase and Mockingbird, and what's his name on that show once upon a time. Hopefully, and their
Hunter.
Pilot.
Yes, Hunter. Yep.
Their pilot never got picked up, so they're still out there.
Big drop ball by Marvel.
Yeah, but I'd rather watch that show than Inhumans, I tell you that, my friends. Mm-hmm. So
that would get me to watch ABC's Marvel Television again.
Yep. Yeah, Chase, or I keep saying that, Bobby.
Bobby and Hunter.
And Hunter.
Yep. Bobby and Hunter, there it is. Even with her weird moles, I don't care. She's a pretty lady, and she did...
You're killing Greg.
She was great. So I mean, S.H.I.E.L.D. is not the worst show I've ever seen. I just wish if we were going to have a weekly Marvel TV show that it was more than, say, Marvel Cops
that kind of take the fallout from the Marvel Cinematic Universe and then spin their wheels for 20 of the 23 episodes that they're on. And so
Coulson acting like a dick to people.
Yeah, the second half was they were in a virtual Hydra world where Hydra had won. They were all kind of captured by – they were captured and put into this virtual world that was controlled by Lady Hydra or the Hydra Queen, who was kind of like Jocasta. She was an artificial intelligence. And it was okay. It was fun. Like I said, I watched the show with my family, and we watch S.H.I.E.L.D. and we watch Flash and sometimes Legends together. But
oh, dear God, I just had a horrible thought about Secret Empire.
Secret Empire? Oh, well, we'll get to that. So anyway, I hope that both Supergirl and S.H.I.E.L.D. improve. Flash was fine. I just hope they don't go to the supervillain who is a speedster yet again this season. And
agreed.
I'd like to see not yet another Harrison Wells. I'd like to see an old Harrison Wells that we've already met instead of just the trope of yet another, a fourth version coming on for season four.
What if it's Cowboy Wells?
Well, we've already seen him, right?
Oh, that's true.
So,
yeah.
So
that's true.
Technically he fits in that, but still I just don't want Crisis on Infinite Wells.
I would watch that show. Ballerina Wells. I want Ballerina Wells.
You know what?
Or would it be a ballerino?
Ballerino.
At this point.
Or how about I want folk dancing Wells.
You know, Michael Flatley, Lord of the Wells.
Yep. That's it.
And Kelly, good for chiming in there. Which of these shows do you think could stand for the most improvement and why?
I think in a lot of ways, like, you know, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. had, I hate watched it pretty much this whole season, I just hate watched it. But there were some shining moments where, like when they were dealing with the Hydraverse and dealing with, it was almost like you had the old team kind of back together again. And I like seeing Ward kind of play the good guy, you know, and it was interesting to see him. I didn't want to see him come back as a regular character, but it was nice to see an alternate version of him where he wasn't, you know, a bad guy. And I agree, I think, with Greg about the, you know, Supergirl. I want to see season three. I want to see them evolve more. I want to see, you know, I think it was interesting the way, I mean, they played out the whole Daxamite attack and how they had to kind of do what they needed to do to defend the Earth and how Mono had to leave. Of course, we know he's going to come back at some point in time. I'm hoping maybe with the Legion's help, he comes back. But I want to see more consistent stories within Supergirl. I think she needs some help in the because I'm tired of some of the things that they kept throwing out there, like, you know, the relationship drama, and I'm like, okay, I know relationships, you have drama, but my God, every other week it's the same shit. Come on, let's move on from this. I would really like to see Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Supergirl kind of evolve a little bit. You know, I think Arrow stepped up its game this last season as opposed to its previous season. And I think Flash was fine. Again, I agree, I think, with everybody that's already said, you know what, we're kind of done with the speedster villains. Let's get with some other classic ones. I mean, I hate the fact that, you know, like Captain Cold and Heat Wave are kind of taken out of the list of people to kind of play. And that, because Captain Cold and Heat Wave were just such classic, just really good villains and played by really good actors. And, you know, Flash has a lot of other people they can throw out there. And I'm just hoping that this next season we'll see that. So that's my take on that.
And fully agreed on all points, but I had a very disturbing thought about Secret Empire, that what if the big twist that's coming is that it's all been a simulation.
And that's how we're going to... And the entire Marvel universe up to this point has been... Oh, God.
You know, yeah, if they do that, you know what? They're that would be a shame, and that would be... Marvel would lose even more readership, I think, because I would just say, you know what? Even with the books that I'm enjoying, I can't support you. I'm out.
What if the last page of Secret Empire is Bobby Ewing in the shower?
Hey, you know what?
Very good.
If that was the case, you know what? A lot of people would be going, "What the fuck is this?" Millennials would be going, "I don't get it. Who's Bobby Ewing?" They'd have to Wikipedia. They'd be on their phone Wikipedia. Oh, I still don't understand. Yeah, I mean, us then though, you, be like, oh, I'm done.
Then the next issue of all the Marvel comics reset to whatever the status quo was in 1987 or whenever that episode of Dallas aired.
It's like 1985. It was a long, long time ago. And as somebody who watched Dallas all the time back in the day, because we didn't have DVRs or, you know, on-demand television, that was a big event. That was kind of like, oh, God, what are they doing? Oh, and it was never the same. So it pissed off a lot of people.
If you wanted to watch a show, you had to watch the show. It wasn't like, you know, at some point when VCRs became kind of the norm and you could record stuff, before then it was like, if you missed it, you missed it. You know, you might catch it in a syndication or a rerun, maybe, but that's it. You're done. You're out, you know.
Russ and I had a question for you guys. What's a VCR?
Well, it's this device that you would put a VHS tape in, and it was, you know, it's kind of like a cassette. You put it in, you hit the record button, and you could record television programs. And you know, in a few years, that recording, if you watched it a lot, would probably degrade, and it'd be grainy. You'd see some staticky stuff.
Occasionally, if you would go into your father's room, you could find naughty VHS.
Hooray!
Yeah.
If you would bring back to your room.
And yeah, Todd's sitting over there like, wait a minute, that's who I am now.
No. Greg and I literally had the same experience.
Yep.
Like, what?
When you find a VHS tape that has no labeling and it's just blank and there's nothing there, and you're like, well, what is this? And you pop it in and you start hearing moaning and thrusting, and you see finally people doing stuff. It's like,
I discovered the females that way.
Oh, this is – oh, okay.
And as the camera pans over, you're like, oh, this is getting good. Wait a minute. Mom and Dad? Fuck!
Oh, that's where they got the NWO music from.
Oh.
Hey, wait a minute. Isn't that Vincent?
No, it's Virgil.
Very good.
Oh, we have gone –
Sorry for that, Russell. Sorry for sullying your show.
We have gone triple X. But let's bring it back a little bit, because as we've said repeatedly during this show, San Diego Comic-Con is going on right now. And even though we're recording this show at night and most of the events are over, it doesn't matter. There's still stuff that's coming out. We got more breaking news right now. Put up the banner. Breaking news. You can't see that, but I can. And it is that DC Home Video, or Warner Home Video as it is, have announced their new slate of DC Animated Universe films that'll be coming up in 2018 and 2019. Of course, they did announce this at premiere of Batman and Harley Quinn that happened this evening in San Diego. And of course, we heard earlier that Batman Gotham by Gaslight will be the next DC Animated Universe movie that's coming up, which is, of course, an adaptation of the Elseworlds title by Mike Mignola of Hellboy fame. This is an Elseworlds title that takes place in, I believe it's like the 1800s era.
Jack the Ripper.
Yeah, it's a Batman Jack the Ripper.
1880s story. Gotham, yep.
It's 1880s London.
London, yeah.
It's London. It's going to be a British Batman, so that should make our buddy Garner very excited. And that's going to be followed by a new movie from the DC Universe original movies that include some of the more recent movies like Justice League versus Teen Titans, Batman and Son, and Justice League War. This will be a Suicide Squad movie called Hell to Pay. And it's going to be an original Suicide Squad story
based within that that continuity. But the big one, and this is the one that caught mine and Greg's attention and hit all the way home, they are finally doing a proper animated Death and Return of Superman, two-part animated film that, unlike the 2007 Superman Doomsday, which was not very loyal to its source material, this is going to be much more in line with what you read in the comics. More of the crazy material, like the inclusion of Justice League characters, and of course the follow-up will be the Reign of the Supermen. So we're going to see stuff like the Eradicator, Steel, Superboy, and of course our favorite Cyborg Superman. So big pop for that one. That one's going to be coming in 2018, but the Death of Superman will be coming up at the end of 2018. This is some big, big news just coming out of San Diego Comic-Con just now. And with that, Greg, go ahead and pop for the people. Tell them what you think.
Oh, I'm pumped. I mean, it's no secret to my friends. It's probably a secret to the listeners because I don't really talk about it ever. But the 2007 Superman Doomsday movie, while I own it, and while there are aspects of it that are very, very good, was a big disappointment to me at the time, because The Death and Return of Superman is a story that means a lot to me because of when I read it and what it meant to me as a kid. And the stories are numerous and well-known at this point of my emotional attachment to that story and that time in comics and the character of Superman. So when the Doomsday movie came out in 2007, I came away really upset because I felt like it had an artificially short runtime, and it tried to cram the whole story into one 70-minute movie, and it did so by mixing and matching characters and almost overcorrecting for some of the complaints that people had about Death of Superman back in the day, which is that Lex Luthor wasn't heavily involved, didn't play a factor in killing Superman. So they kind of try to have their cake and eat it too by having Doomsday but also having Lex be responsible for him and doing a lot of changes that just – to me, they didn't work the way that they wanted them to. And it ended up being Superman versus a clone of Superman, and you didn't get all the side characters in. So this is exciting because this means we're going to get Funeral for a Friend. This means that we're going to get some of the iconic scenes from the comics that worked so well on me that maybe will be updated for a modern audience, with new dialogue and stuff. Like, for instance, the Kents and how they – their relationship with Lois that you see during Funeral for a Friend, which is – some of the most emotional comic books of its era by Louise Simonson, that can be adapted and kind of brought into a new generation of people. So that's super exciting. And most importantly, of anything else involved with this project, I'm really excited to see who they're going to get to voice Mitch, the whiny bastard kid that hates Superman and then eventually went over to his side. And even more important than that, Guy freaking Gardner. Because you got to have Guy Gardner in The Death of Superman.
Well, yes. And Todd, weigh in here.
Who's going to play Bloodwind?
Oh, dear God.
That's a great question. I am going to think about that right now, and I'm going to suggest Dave Chappelle.
Well, whoever plays Martian Manhunter on Supergirl, just because he's an excellent actor, not because there's any connection between Martian Manhunter and Bloodwind.
None. But Todd, what do you really think about the idea of a two-part Death and Return of Superman or any of these movies that they just announced?
Well, Gotham by Gaslight is going to be fantastic, although it's weird because in the Gotham by Gaslight continuity, Alfred is American, which is really kind of trippy.
That's pretty cool, actually.
I'm excited about that. I think if they go in the Elseworlds direction a little bit more, I think that's a very smart way to go. If you go with some of the Justice League Elseworlds and some of the Superman Elseworlds, they've been teasing a Red Sun movie forever. So I would love to see them go there eventually. But a Suicide Squad animated film will be probably pretty good. The Batman / Suicide Squad film, or at least the Batman
the :
Assault on Arkham,
yeah, that was
which was
one.
Kind of a backdoor pilot, so to speak, to the Suicide Squad. That one, if they put it, say, more maybe a little bit more movie friendly, or at least movie continuity friendly, that'd be great. But Death and Return of Superman is a fantastic series, and for all the reasons that Greg mentioned, I mean, you're going to have the Reign of the Superman, and if you can get Shaq to voice Steel, that would be fantastic.
Oh, I'll big pop for that one. That's good.
Yeah, and the Eradicator, I'd be interested in seeing their take on that. But you had great issues. You had the Adventures of Superman, I believe it was 600, where you had kind of Superman and John Kent floating around the afterlife.
Yes, yeah,
That was a great comic, Dan Jurgens.
And that was like I remember that issue because it had a special cover, and my mom got me two copies of it.
Had that tearaway film on the cover.
Yep. One of them I still have polybagged to this day, and it was my reward for getting good grades at school. Like I got to the car, and I was so stupid. I didn't know that she had already bought it for me, but I gave her my report card, and I had all A's. And so she pulled out this bag, and it had Adventures 600 in it, and I was so excited.
That's cool. I think because Superman, spoiler, Superman dies, right? Now, if they go with the concept of slowing down the frame rate with each kind of chapter until he dies, that would be kind of cool. Because the comics, each issue as you grew closer and closer, reduced the number of panels per page until the death of Superman was all splash pages, right? So that would mm-hmm. be kind of a nice homage. I don't know. I was just trying to trying to tie that in. But
it'd be a way of doing it.
Or change the aspect ratio as you get closer and closer.
Make it more and more widescreen. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no, those were the high points of a lot of people give Dan Jurgens all the credit, but Mike Carlin was the editor of Superman at the time, and he oversaw the whole thing, and it was really his baby, bringing that to fruition, and then eventually bringing him back with the long hair, and was really kind of took the Superman concept with the weekly books where each issue tied into the next. That was to me the high point of the Superman mythos.
Agreed.
And even though you had different creative teams and different aspects of each of Superman is supporting cast in each issue, the continuity was so tight that, you know, you had 52 issues of Superman a year for a while, which is fantastic. So yeah, that to me was a high point of my fandom, and hopefully this film will harken back to that and really, really bring those memories back to me.
Yeah, definitely hoping for something really big out of this. I got a lot of hope for it with that. But, Kelly, what do you think about this? Just breaking news.
You know, as far as, you know, the shows and everything, I mean, I'm you know, I'm looking forward to everything right now, just because there's, you know, we're in this hiatus where there's not a lot going on. So I'm pretty much open to whatever's coming out right now, just because I want to be entertained. And
well, what are your, you know, what are your thoughts on the Death and Return of Superman, two-part animated movie?
Well, I mean, you know, I'll definitely watch it. Am I like super excited to see it? You know, maybe it's because I've read the comic, I know the story, and yeah, it's going to be animated. Hopefully, like, you know, it's going to be more in depth, like the Death and Return was in the comic series. So, you know, I'll see it. Like I said, I'll definitely watch it, and I'll make my opinions known after I see it. I like to go into things now most of the time with kind of almost a neutral feel, because I don't want to be let down, and that's just, you know, that's just my defense mechanism.
Yeah, that's fair enough. So long as I get a Doomsday punching the face off of Proto Supergirl, I think I will be just in hog heaven. But moving on to our next subject, which is actually on the format sheet. We've had quite a few comic book movies drop since May up to now. In fact, the real meat of our comic book movie going happened within this second quarter. So the question is, which comic book movie has been the best so far and why? And, of course, we're taking a look at the movies Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, Wonder Woman, and Spider-Man Homecoming. These three have dropped within this second quarter. So, Todd, I want to start with you on this one. Which of these movies really hit for you and why?
I will throw out Wonder Woman because it's – I mean, not throw it out and for contention, but I will say that was the one kind of reinvented the wheel. It was a perfect standalone film. Spider-Man Homecoming was a terrific film that tied in both to the Spider-Man mythos and the Marvel Universe and was much funnier than anything I had expected and had a lot more MCU stuff than I even thought would happen. But definitely Wonder Woman, I think, gets the nod. And yet all three were excellent films that I will purchase for home viewership. And but I will give the nod to Wonder Woman because it wasn't just a movie. It was a cultural event. It was significant in that it was the first DCU movie to get it right perfectly the first time. Man of Steel is a mixed bag for a lot of people. Some people like it. Some people don't. But it's inconsistent. I'd say it's still a B plus maybe. Wonder Woman's the first true A that the DCU or the what do they call it? DCEU has gotten from the get go out of the bag. I mean, it came out. It was fantastic. I'm really looking forward to seeing where they go with it. But how does that translate to the rest of the DCU films that are coming? And we'll talk about that in a second. Yeah. So Wonder Woman gets my nod.
Excellent choice. For me, this was a tough one for me because I loved both of the MCU movies that dropped this year. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 and Spider-Man Homecoming both nailed it. Nailed it big time for me. I got a big pop off both. But like you, Todd, I got to give it to Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman hit those marks like you were talking about. Like it reinvented the wheel without reinventing the wheel, if that makes any sense. Like it was a superhero movie, but it didn't feel like everything we'd already seen before. Whereas Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 felt like an extension of its previous film, but with its foot a little heavier on the comedy end. And Spider-Man Homecoming, while a much better start to a new Spider-Man franchise than we've seen ever, including the Raimi trilogy, it lacked the emotional highs of something like Spider-Man 2, which I still hold up as the ultimate Spider-Man film at this point. Although, if things progress the way I hope and think they will, the Spider-Man Homecoming sequel will probably blow everything else out of the water. At least that's the hope. But Wonder Woman, as you said, Todd, good way to put it, cultural event that brought back our definitely gain or put some faith back into the DCEU, something that it was certainly struggling with up to now after its abysmal cool showing in 2016. But while financially successful, certainly not critically successful. And with Wonder Woman, this is the, I guess financially speaking, the strongest showing from a comic book movie in 15 years. And that's not just me. That's not me saying that. That is actually like many, many sites out there are reporting this, that this movie has held on financially speaking better than any superhero movie of the last 15 years. And I think they just mean that by in terms of its percentage drop at the box office each weekend. It's been a very low drop, and that's something we haven't seen in a long time. So Wonder Woman has really kind of changed the game, if you will. And it's very rare that we see movies coming out like that. And it's a far cry from the days of people saying that it was a discombobulated mess. Glad to see that it all turned out the way it is. So, Greg, your thoughts on this question?
This is by far the hardest question we've had on the show. There hasn't, even beyond the quarter, there's not been anything less than a good comic book movie all year long. They've all been excellent.
Yes.
And so, and that carries through into this quarter. All three movies were very good. For me, it comes down to Wonder Woman or Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 as which one I prefer. And it's a coin flip. Based on my mood tonight, I think Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 is actually the one that I'm going to pick for my for my favorite of this quarter. And the reason for that is I can kind of nitpick some things throughout Wonder Woman, you know, at different parts towards the end, especially that maybe, you know, maybe could have been done a little bit better. Some of the CI maybe. Homecoming had a few things that kind of bugged me a little bit, even though it was really good. I think back to Guardians, and I just remember watching it. I've seen it, I think, twice, maybe three times now. And I'm trying to think back to even the third time watching it, leaving the theater. And it just left me with a sense of, you know what, that was just a damn consistently great movie. And it checked all the boxes I want out of a summer blockbuster. It was funny. It had great action. The CGI looked incredible, I thought. The music was integrated so well. The performances, to me, were a step up from the first movie. Cause everybody was more comfortable in their roles. Now, in the first movie, I'm amazingly high on. But this one, to me, even took it to a new level. And I think, for me, Guardians Volume 2 is the one that I can remember the most moments from, I guess. And Wonder Woman would be very close to that. But just a great year for comic book fans, man. It's been, as far as movies go, there's never been a better time to see your childhood, the characters we all thought when we were kids we would never see on the big screen. And not only are we seeing those characters, we're seeing characters that we never even read when we were kids. I never read a Rocket Raccoon book when I was a little boy, but it's damn awesome to see them on the big screen and to learn about these characters that I didn't even know about from the comics. You know, and it's also nice to see, as a wrestling fan, it's nice to see somebody else make a living outside of the business and make a star out of themselves the way that Dave Bautista's done with his great portrayal of Drax the Destroyer.
Yep, big pop for Big Dave. He was great in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, and I'm right there with you, Greg. I never read Guardians. I never cared about any of that growing up, but these movies have made me care about those characters, and that is that's big props to the folks over at Marvel who greenlit that one, and to James Gunn especially. Well, what a director and writer he's been. James Gunn has been a revelation.
Absolutely. And to throw a similar compliment onto Wonder Woman, Steve Trevor is a character that I had never really bought into in the comics. And Chris Pine, to me, just totally was a revelation as Steve Trevor. Now, I want to give credit to Greg Rucka and Liam Sharp. They've done a damn fine job of making me care about him in the comics. But Chris Pine, to me, just in the same way that we mentioned about the Guardians and how James Gunn has brought them to life and really elevated their status in our eyes, it's the same thing that portrayal that Patty Jenkins had in the director's chair and the writers had, but also Chris Pine's performance brought a new life to a character in Steve Trevor that traditionally I've found kind of eh.
Yeah, Steve Trevor traditionally is bland in one note. There's not been that much to him, but between Chris Pine's portrayal and what Greg Rucka and Liam Sharp have done, they've added second and third dimensions to his character and made us care about him and want to see more of him coming up. So I really hope that we're going to get to see more Chris Pine's take on Steve Trevor. That would be tremendous if they found a good way to do that. And of course, got to give big prop to Patty Jenkins. What a revelation she turned out to be, and only her second movie. She did this with her second movie. This lady is a phenom. She's a juggernaut when it comes to making these movies. I can't wait to see what else she does. I hope she signs on for Wonder Woman 2. Kelly, I think I know the answer to this question because you've let me know on many occasions what your number one movie, like comic book movie ever is. But tell the people at home which comic book movie so far or in this quarter was the best to you.
I'd have to say Wonder Woman. I mean, that's it. And a really good close runner-up would be Logan. But I mean, Wonder Woman is good.
Logan was last quarter, but like between May and now, would you put Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 in second place or Spider-Man: Homecoming?
That's a tough one. I mean, they're both really, really good. I would probably say Spider-Man. I think that would be, you know, a good second place.
Spider-Man deserves a lot of credit, I think. good, good, strong footing for the character. Certainly a much better reset for him. And it was a dangerous thing trying to reset a movie that in the last, like, 15 years has had, you know, this is now its third franchise. That's a difficult sell, people. I mean, people are getting a little, you know, reboot weary, but I think more than a little reboot weary. But here we are with probably the strongest first showing yet for the character. So we're in a much better place with Spider-Man now. I feel good about it. As a longtime Spider-Man fan, this is it's good seeing my favorite comic book character of all time finally done justice on the big screen. Little nitpicky things here and there that aren't even worth going into, but as far as the movie itself, strong work. Glad to see that John Watts is going to come back and direct the sequel. And can't wait to see more of Tom Holland, who is just the embodiment of Peter Parker and Spider-Man.
And I would say the second best Marvel villain.
Oh, God, in general. Yes. Michael Keaton's Vulture. Nailed
so
it.
Good.
Reinvented,
so good.
Reinvented that character for the modern age in a way that is going to make him better than he has ever been before. And we may see
you're
more
gonna
of him.
You're going to see the comics take that route with the Vulture.
They've got
in the near future.
They have got to. That was too good to ignore. The comics have absolutely got to incorporate that take on Vulture from here on out. Find a way to make it happen, because that was just so good. And he may actually eliminate the need for the Osborns, honestly. Like, with Michael Keaton there, with the way he plays the character, we may not need Norman Osborn at all. He could be the recurring villain, not to tell tales out of skew or spoil it for anybody who hasn't seen it. But
And a little thing, Russell, I loved, and I don't even think I got to mention this in our review of it in the longest running weekly episodic comic book podcast in all of PlayStation.
In all of PlayStation.
If you would have done that slower, I would have joined you.
But I feel like the end credit scene involved, I don't want to spoil it for anyone that hasn't seen the movie. There is an end credit scene involving the Vulture that to me really cemented my thoughts on him as an amazing villain, because there is the tendency in the Marvel movies to go with one-note villains who are cackling, evil, bad guys. You know, I think to Doctor Strange, for instance, they're just evil. That's all there are, is they're evil. And that's fine once in a while. But what separates the Vulture is, as you see in that post-credit scene, he is not an evil guy by any stretch of the imagination. He's somebody who has done bad things, but at the end of the day, he is not some sociopath or something like that. And I really thought that did so much to humanize him and did so much to really make me want to see more of this guy going forward. And even hope potentially, possibly, you know, not to tell tales out of skewl, but maybe perhaps there's a redemption story at some point that can be told.
I am up for every bit of that. There's so much that can be done now with the Vulture character and with the other characters who are very much connected to him throughout the movie, that I don't want to get into that for people who haven't seen it. But there are two little sub-questions that I wanted to get to, but since we're talking Spider-Man, I want to get to that one first, because we know that this version of the character occurs in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but Sony Pictures still retains the rights to pretty much all the other Spider-Man characters, it would seem, and they are crafting their own Spider-Man-esque spinoff universe, of course, with the Venom movie that's coming up with Tom Hardy in the lead, and with another movie called Silver and Black, which is going to feature Silver Sable and the Black Cat in a Thelma and Louise-esque buddy film, whereas Venom is going to be more horror action. And it's really kind of unknown right now whether or not these movies actually connected to Spider-Man. Will they occur in the Marvel Cinematic Universe? Some of the latest information we have seems to suggest that they are, but they'll be kind of like the the Netflix Marvel shows where they're technically part of the MCU, but they're ancillary. They don't really interact with the larger MCU at all. They're just they're related in name only. So what do you guys think about this? Do you think that Sony should just craft its own story, its own universe with those characters and not try to play in the MCU sandbox? Or can they pull this off? Can this work without those characters ever appearing in the MCU proper? Tom, I want to start with you on that one.
Well, I think it's stupid if they would try to make it a separate thing that does not tie in. That it all depends if they can use the Tom Holland, Peter Parker or not. So if they say do a Venom / Carnage movie without Tom Holland, God bless them, because it's going to fail miserably. But the reason the MCU has been successful, for besides being all good movies, has been the tight continuity and the interconnectivity. And so if they can't, or if they choose, if they willfully choose not to go that direction and choose to make it its own universe, I think it's just spinning. Like I said, I do spinning wheels. I say these things. It's like futility. But that's my particular perspective. I think for these movies to be successful, it's got to have some kind of connection. And Tom Holland is that fulcrum, if you will. And so if he exists in both places simultaneously, so be it. I think that can work. But if they try to make it a unique thing in and of itself, I don't think it will be successful at all. And that being said, I think that if we skip ahead because we're running out of time, Gifted is kind of falls under the same banner for TV. They're trying to make it its own thing, but the only reason Gifted would be interesting at all to someone like us would be its connectivity to the X-Men universe. But if they try to make it its own thing, it's not going to succeed. Fuck that.
Yep, and that's a bit of other SDCC information that dropped today, is that X-Men's Gifted, it is going to be its own universe and not connected to the films, which is the stupidest thing that Fox could have done with that TV series, and basically sets it up to fail. Yep. And with that, I'm going to kind of agree with Todd on the assessment of Spider-Man. Like Tom Holland, if they're going to do this and they're going to call it the Spider-Man universe, you got to have a Spider-Man in there. You're going to have Tom Holland appear. If you're basing it around Venom and calling it like the Venomverse, fair enough. I can see how that could work. Venom is a big character. He's well known. He could certainly carry his own movie, especially with a strong lead like Tom Hardy in the lead role. But let's face it, when folks see these characters, and I think especially in the case of Silver Sable and Black Cat, if you don't have some kind of connective glue like Spider-Man in all of this, some webbing, if you will, that's not going to work quite as well. I mean, maybe it'll be a good movie, but how are you going to like really attract eyes to it? Like, what's their emotional inroad to that movie? And if you were going to do an original piece like that and say, oh, we don't need Spider-Man to make it work, then why did you call it Silver Sable and Black Cat in the first place? So that's just my thoughts on it. I can see how both sides should work, but I also think that Sony needs to realize that they really need Disney and the MCU on this one in order to make this really work. Sure, they can make their own side movies if they like, but they better play ball with Disney in every which possible way they can and just enjoy the paycheck, but stay in your lane. Enjoy the money. Stay in your lane, and everything else could be fine. But I don't think that all these movies are going to work. Silver and Black being the one that I think is going to face the most uphill battle, mostly because people are as familiar with those characters. Kelly, your thoughts on these universes possibly coexisting or having to work independently of one another? I think Kelly fell asleep.
Fuck the Inhumans. The Inhumans are garbage.
I think the alcohol finally caught up to.
No, family. I'm here.
Oh, there he is.
Yay!
Yay!
Like, Kelly had to step away from his mic for a minute, but we were talking the Sony and Disney arrangement of Spider-Man and having his separate movies. Can they work together? Should they exist together, or is there a way for them to work independently of one another and still work?
I think they should just let Sony, or not Sony. I think Sony should just, you know, let Marvel do it, rake in some money, and just be happy with what Marvel's doing. Because I think Marvel knows how to deal with their characters, and knows how to tell a compelling story. I just can't trust Sony to do any of that because they've hacked so many things up, and they just seem to get all in a fluster when it comes to crafting a film. And I don't know. I think it just let Marvel handle it. Enjoy the money and just shut up.
That brings up a good point that Sony tends to their reach tends to exceed their grasp. They really want to do more than what they're maybe capable of doing right away. So, Greg, your thoughts on this?
Yeah. You know, let's look at the track records. Sony, Spider-Man 3, Amazing Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man 2, Marvel Cinematic Universe, a bunch of great movies. You know, like
– Scoreboard.
Yeah, it's almost like I'm of two minds of it because I understand it. Part of me feels like there's no possible way that two independent movie studios are going to be able to keep their continuities tight enough to have a shared universe between each other. But then I think back to how well it's been done with the MCU, how they've got the TV universe where it's technically part of the MCU. But they don't have to – it's not like Daredevil's showrunners are sitting there having to worry about what, you know, what Kevin Feige is doing with the Avengers movies. They're able to do their own thing. So when I started this question, I was thinking, you know what? Maybe they should just stay separate, just focus on making their own good movies. And the more that I think about it, the more I think you guys are right. I think you all made good points, Russell, you and Todd – both talked about, you know, if you're gonna call yourself a movie based on these Spider-Man characters, you kind of need to have some sort of spider presence there. And if you can get Tom Holland to show up, even better. But if you can't get him to show up in your movie, there's no reason to not at least have a world where Spider-Man exists. Have him in the newspapers. Have people talking about Spider-Man existing. That'll be enough, and then if he can show up, awesome. So if I were them, I would at least keep that door open to have a shared universe, because the minute you close that door and you say, no, we're doing our own thing, well, you're cutting yourself off from storyline possibilities, and B, you're kind of in a backdoor way setting yourself up to reboot your whole universe again anyway if it fails. Whereas if you keep this door open, the MCU can always step in and say, hey, you know what? Your Venom movie didn't work. We got a better idea for Venom. Let us do it.
And that kind of gives us a good segue into the last bit of this question, which is, you know, the whole idea of having to possibly reboot your universe, or, you know, undoing all the good that you've done by making this one good decision. Like, don't fall back into bad habits. Don't go back to what you were doing, because that's when you're going to wind up failing. And that kind of brings us back around to Wonder Woman, because this represents a changing guard. Like some new leadership came in whenever this movie was in production as a result of bad press for the previous films in the DCEU. So do you guys think that Wonder Woman represents a real turnaround in the DCEU? Or is it too soon to tell? And I want to come back to Greg on that one.
It's too soon to tell. I mean, quite honestly, that there's no way to answer this question for certain one way or the other. We won't know. I mean, we've got Justice League coming in November. We've got Aquaman coming down the pipe, potentially Shazam. And so we're going to have to wait and see how this all plays out. I am not going to assume that because Wonder Woman was awesome that Justice League is going to be awesome. I think there is a chance that Justice League could be awesome. There is a chance that it could be average, and there's a chance it could be terrible. And if we go right back, we take another step back with Justice League, we're kind of right back at that even field we were at before. I think Wonder Woman is a sure thing at this point. Greenlight the sequels, going forward with that. But the rest of the DCEU is very much a work in progress, and of all the projects that are being worked on, I mean, the only one that feels like it's chugging along with a lot of momentum is Aquaman. So, and it looks great. Everything about Aquaman looks like it's going to rock, but I'm very, very trepidatious about the rest of the slate. So we'll see how it plays out. I think it's just too early to tell.
As do I. I think that Wonder Woman was a great step and shows what the DCEU can be. With all the stuff that's happening with Justice League, of course, with the bit of breaking news that that Ben Affleck is looking for an exit to playing Batman, and that Warner Brothers is trying to work with him to figure out a way to make that happen, as they say, gracefully. And, you know, with all the supposedly extensive reshoots that are being done to Justice League by Joss Whedon, it's anybody's guess what the end of this year is going to look like. And while Wonder Woman definitely shows that they can make a really good movie, it doesn't mean they're going to do it every time. And I'm like you, Greg. Like, I'm trying to go into Justice League not with my expectations like through the floor or anything. But yeah, I'm walking in trying to keep my expectations at a very like medium level, not expecting it to gain everything I want, but still hoping it's better than some of the stuff we've gotten up to now. Hopefully it's more focused film. But we will see. Kelly, your thoughts on Wonder Woman, and does it present a turnaround in the DCEU, or are we still like way too early to tell? Kelly disappeared on us again.
Too soon to tell.
Well, Todd, we'll come to you on this question.
Sorry. A heavy sigh. I'm going to say too soon to tell, literally. It's too soon to tell, and Justice League is the true wild card here. We'll see if the there's Kelly. If the reshoots and just Joss Whedon involvement make a difference, but like I said, Wonder Woman was great from the get-go. BVS was much better in the director's cut, which we all saw 6 months after the film came out. And Geoff Johns just seems to get more and more involved in these films. In fact, he's writing the script for Shazam, or producing Shazam, so that's a great thing. But we'll have to see what happens with Justice League, which is not happening until November. So I think Wonder Woman at this point stands alone, and is unfair to judge the success of the whole line based upon the one film.
Fully agree. It can't be taken as, you know, all encompassing just based on one movie success. But Kelly, you there with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
Let's get your thoughts on does Wonder Woman represent a turnaround of the DCEU, or are we still way too early in the game to know for sure?
No, I think it is a turnaround. I mean, I know that there's a lot of there's a divided group of folks between, you know, Batman and Superman and Man of Steel. You know, DC has had some shaky ground. I think Wonder Woman is the moment where it's like, okay, all or nothing, and they showed, hey, this is it, we're here. And I think with the momentum of Wonder Woman, I think, you know, we'll see a stronger and more, I guess, coherent kind of DCU as far as in the movieverse. And, you know, the, you know, we'll have to wait and see. I mean, I'm going to go in like I always have with kind of a neutral stance and just wait for the movie to finish and make my final opinion. But, you know, Wonder Woman kind of just stood out and, you know, definitely broke a lot of new ground. And, I think it's a strong point for DC. And I think, you know, they can finally, you know, kind of have some feelings of like, okay, yeah, we hit the mark. Finally, we hit it, you know, it, not that their other movies didn't hit the mark. It was just kind of off a bit, way off with Suicide Squad. But I mean, Man of Steel, I enjoyed, and Batman and Superman, the director's cut, I thought was a good film. And I know that my opinion is, you know, there's a lot of folks that have a lot of different opinions about those two films.
Sure.
But I think Wonder Woman really did just not only hit the mark, but totally just destroy it.
Yeah, and it's a fair point that this was a stark turnaround, one that got a lot of positive attention. And with that, we're going to, you know, very quickly, because we have really gone super long on this one, guys. Which upcoming comic book movie are you most looking forward to now? Since we only have two left for this year, this should be really, and I'll start. I am most looking forward to seeing Thor Ragnarok. Honestly, that trailer still just makes me laugh hysterically, and I'm very excited to see what they're going to do with the movie. And Kelly, which of the two movies left are you most looking forward to?
Same. Just for the entertainment value. It just looks like it's going to be this Thor film is going to be a lot better than its previous. It's going to be lighthearted, funny, and entertaining.
Absolutely. Todd, your thoughts of the last two movies we have left this year?
Ragnarok by country mile, though I think they've given away too much in the trailers, but I always say that. I wish they had just, you know, Ragnarok's supposed to be the cataclysmic event of the whole Norse mythology, and yet we have kind of the aftermath, like, oh, he escapes and he's got a new helmet and he's got short hair and Thor's and Hulk's a gladiator against him in the Grandmaster's arena. So I think they gave away too much personally. That's my opinion. I wanted more of the Hela and Valkyrie battleground stuff in the trailer, but I guess, anyway, short answer, Ragnarok.
All right. And finally, Greg.
I'm going to cheat Russell, and I am going to pick a third option, the Kingsman sequel.
Ah, yes. I totally forgot about the Kingsman sequel, which was also coming up this year, because that trailer looked hilarious.
Yeah, I think that's the one I'm most looking forward to. I'm really excited. I'm excited about all three, but I think the Kingsman sequel is probably the one that I'm most – gosh, I just can't wait to see that. And the other two are going to be great, and I'm excited about them too. But man, Kingsman, if you haven't seen it out there, folks, the first Kingsman movie is amazing.
And we just rewatched that one last weekend with Nick Duke for enjoying his first time. All fun to pop Nick's cherry. In any case, that brings us to the final bit of – mercifully the final bit of this extra long podcast. And that is to pick your biggest winner and or loser so far, of this quarter of 2017 from May to July. Who won, who lost, can be anything from a comic book company, a creative team, a film studio, TV show, just so long as it's comics related. Let's start with Greg. Who's winning in the second quarter of 2017?
The biggest winner of this quarter in the world of comics would be Marvel Studios. You dropped not one, but two critically acclaimed, financially acclaimed, worldwide acclaimed films in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 and Spider-Man Homecoming. And think of this accomplishment, gentlemen. This studio, Marvel Studios, they managed to make a sequel to a movie no one thought would ever get made in the first place about characters 90% of Americans have never heard of. And it did incredibly well. I mean, that is an incredible accomplishment. And then they rebooted a franchise for the third – they booted a franchise for the third time in 15 years, as Russell mentioned earlier. And they did so not only successfully but overwhelmingly successfully, and managed to reinvigorate a character who has had already had multiple portrayals on the big screen that seem to be getting diminishing returns. So Marvel Studios is to me is the walk away winner of this quarter.
And hey, fair enough. Todd, who's winning the second quarter of 2017, or who's losing it? You tell me.
Well, I'm going to be technical here and say Marvel only split that victory because Sony produced Pete Spider-Man, Homecoming, and Marvel got, or Disney, who owns Marvel, got zilch, which is interesting. You know, I mean, they get to use Tom Holland for their movies, and they got to loan the Iron Man characters over to Spider-Man, over to Sony for that film. But I can't disagree with the choice of Marvel, just because it's like found money. Guardians of the Galaxy 2 was almost, I'm not going to say pure profit, but it's taking something that was successful, building upon it, and they're going to have a third one in a couple years. Plus, you have the fantastic theme park tie-ins, such as you'll see at the Disneyland Park and at Walt Disney World here in the future. They are rejiggering a ride to incorporate the Guardians of the Galaxy. So I'll say Marvel Studios / Disney is the big winner. But we're all the big winners because look at all the content we get that we didn't have 15 years ago, you know?
It's true. And Kelly, your biggest winner and or loser of the second quarter of 2017?
I think I have to agree with everybody. I think Marvel, I mean, the cinematic side is they've done it again. I mean, they've really have Guardians has been both movies have been really widely accepted and fun. And I think they're in my top list when it comes to my favorite Marvel films. And I think they're continuing to, you know, full steam ahead. They keep knocking it out.
It is hard to argue with any of that. So I'm not really gonna, but I'm going to kind of look at things from a slightly different angle, because I'm going to say that right now I feel like the hype around some of the stuff that DC has got coming up, especially the stuff that they've announced so far through San Diego Comic-Con, and of course with how big a cultural phenomenon that Wonder Woman suddenly became, I got to give it to them. Not Warner Brothers necessarily, because Warner Brothers they're still in a spot, but DC Comics overall for me, I feel like has really nailed it. But everything you guys said about Marvel is absolutely right on. They're the ones who are just like, you know, they basically got a license to print money at this point. They're rolling in it. There's no question, and they'll continue to be because they have really positioned themselves in such a strong fashion. But for me, DC has stepped up its game in 2017 in a big bad way.
And across all formats too. The comic books, the movie in this quarter was excellent. The TV shows have been excellent. Yep. The games have been excellent.
And then the announcement about these upcoming animated films is a boon to me. Of course they've got a new animated movie that is that just dropped today, Batman Harley Quinn, featuring the voices of Kevin Conroy and basically the Batman the Animated Series cast, save one, and even an animation style like that. But anyway, that's, you know, looking at the bigger picture, like DC Comics really has had a pretty banner year in 2017, and hopefully that momentum can continue to roll. But Marvel has got this down to a science, and they're, like I said, they're just churning them out one after another, and of course, they're going to get my money this fall, but
mercifully, that brings us to an end of this this edition of the Sellers Points Quarterly. These shows are typically going to go longer anyway, just because there's a lot to talk about in these quarters. And, you know, when we come back for the next quarter, we'll have even more stuff to talk about. And, of course, we'll be tweeting out about all the cool stuff that's happened in San Diego Comic-Con to kind of amend some of the stuff that we've talked about here as we get new information, of course. So, before we go, I want to let you guys plug your shows a bit. Todd, where can people find you on social media? And, of course, what you got coming up on Conversation Comics?
Perhaps I will someday have a Conversation Comics dedicated Twitter. But for now, it's at Todd Weber Guitar on the Twitters. And Tim Cable and I are expected to record and publish part 6 of our fantastic series on the Byrne Claremont X-Men from the late 70s / 80s, hopefully in August or late July, depending on when this drops. But hopefully you'll check that out and check out the previous 5. And also like our page on Place to Be Nation Comics on the Facebook.
Absolutely. And we've got a new way to comment on all of our stuff too. We have created a discuss boards on the main Place to Be Nation site where you will have a link to this. So you can carry on a conversation there or in our, as Todd mentioned, our comics Facebook group. Either way, join the conversation and talk to us about it. And also check out all those episodes of Conversation Comics because the re-exploration of the Byrne and Claremont X-Men has just been some of the most fun listening I've had in quite some time.
Definitely.
And Greg, where can people find you and what's coming up on HTF?
People can find me on Twitter at gphillips8652. That's GPHILLIPS 8652. And what you'll find on my Twitter account is lots of tweets about wrestling, lots of tweets about comics, television, etc., and very few tweets about anything of actual substance. As for my show, Hard Traveling Fanboys, I'm not sure exactly when folks will be listening to this show, but we got a few awesome things coming your way. By the time people are listening to this, our latest show probably would have dropped, which is a Long Book Hunters on Mike Grell's famous The Long Bow Hunters. The reason that we have the name for that show, rereading that and reviewing it, and certainly delving into some of what makes it such an iconic story. And moving forward, we have a lot of exciting projects in August coming up. One of which you're all part of, except for Kelly, due to scheduling issues, and that is Place to Be Nation Pop Comics Theater, as we are going to be bringing to the world at some point in the near future our version of arguably greatest comic book / graphic novel of all time, our take on the classic Alan Moore and Dave Gibbons tale Watchmen. I think that's probably the most exciting thing we have coming up, Russell.
We promise nothing in terms of quality. All we promise is that it's a thing that exists and that it was really hard not to laugh hysterically while recording.
Absolutely. And our producer extraordinaire, Todd Weber, has done a fabulous job
doing all the hard and heavy lifting. As for what we've got coming up on the Sellers Points podcast, the next edition, which will be way shorter than this one was, we're going to have a new episode of Rebooked, where we are going to revisit the infamous Spider-Man 3. We're going to take a swing at this one. And
swing.
Yes. Yeah. And then, of course, August is also our next edition of the Speculators Corner, where we and Claire are going to talk all things Spider-Man Homecoming. We're going to talk about what we want to see in the sequel, where we think they're headed. The possibilities are endless. So we're going to get deep on that one in August. And, of course, there's plenty more to come later on in the year. And in the meantime, you can find us on Twitter. You can find me at Russell_Sellers, and you can find Kelly at HKP2814. Join the Facebook page, as we said, and definitely comment on this on the PCB Nation site. Get you a Discuss account, which is really simple to do. Just you can actually use your Facebook account to sign up for it even. That makes it very, very simple.
My friend Jim Ross is going to tell you how to spell discuss.com.
And particularly, folks, it's D-I-S-Q-U-S. It's not D-I-S-C-U-S like you might think. It's D-I-S-Q-U-S.
And somebody dissed that cuss. No?
Son of a bitch.
Well, there we are. Guys, it's been great talking with all of you. I want to say a very special thanks to both Todd and Greg. Thank you guys for staying up so late with us to do this.
It's late and I'm on the West Coast.
Yes, it's late and Todd is like several hours behind us. But in any case, thank you again for joining us on this special edition, this extra long edition of the Sellers Points podcast. And with that, we will see you all next show.
I was walking down the street on a sunny day. Hubba, 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 hubba. A feeling in my bones says I have my way. Hubba, 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 hubba. Oh, I'm a happy boy.
Happy boy.
I'm a happy boy.
Happy boy.
Oh, ain't it good when things are going your way. Hey, hey. My little dog Spot got hit by a car. Hubba, 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 hubba. Put his guts in a box and put him in a drawer. Hubba, 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 hubba. Oh, I'm a happy boy.
Happy boy.
Oh, I'm a happy boy.
Happy boy.
Oh, ain't it good when things are